Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros, welcome back to another edition of Leaving in the Ring, my boxing fans' official radio show. I'm your host, Dave Duenas, with my co-host, Gabriel Montoya. And the man behind the switchboard is our boy, the producer, Mr. David Chin. How's everybody doing out there? We got a good fight, a good set of fights happening this weekend. We're going to do the breakdown, predictions. We're going to get the fans to call in, the listeners, to talk about who their pick is going to be between Sergio Martinez and Darren Barker. On the undercard of that fight is a great matchup. Brian Vera and Andy Lee are going at it again on the rematch. Andy Lee having the short end of that fight, being TKO'd. The ref stepped in, and it was, you know what, it was kind of controversial just because the fact that Andy Lee was throwing back. He did land the last 1-2 combination to Vera's head, snapped his head back, and then the ref jumped in and waved it off. But there was a whole purpose, a whole reason. You could see Andy Lee was being overwhelmed. He was getting caught with some clean, heavy, looping shots from Brian Vera out of Texas. And now they're going to do it again, settle the score. I'm going to get in my co-host here, Gabriel Montoya. What's up, brother?
What's up, man? How you doing?
I'm doing good, doing good. You know, I'm excited about this weekend's fights. You got two good middleweight fights happening on HBO. And, you know what, let me say this. You know, the undercard here, this is the thing, is that you had Andy Lee, and this was on ESPN. So if some of you guys, if you didn't catch it, you know, because I get a lot of guys that say, I don't watch ESPN fights and stuff. You're missing out. You know, because you always miss out. Let's say five fights out of them, one out of five, you're going to end up getting a hell of a fight that you're going to end up talking about for the next week or two. And Brian Vera and that Andy Lee first scrap when they met each other in the center of the ring was a big promotional push for Andy Lee because he's an Ireland kid, came down, started working at the Kronk with Emmanuel Stewart. So ESPN and a lot of other people were putting a lot of stock into this guy. And Brian Vera at the time was just brought in to be a test, to see where Andy Lee was at, because the fact that he was fighting guys that didn't have recognizable names. Brian Vera had been knocked out by a contender, which Brian Vera was part of that contender series and stuff. He was not, I'm trying to remember the guy's name. You know, I have it in my head. He was knocked out in the second round by, Gabe, come on, help me out. I know you know the guy I'm talking about.
But Gidon Codrington?
There you go.
Yeah.
He was knocked out in the second round, so, you know, he was being brought in because he was a tough, rugged, can take a punch, but was knocked out on the second round by a one punch, but was brought in for Andy Lee to see exactly how was he going to be able to handle pressure from a Texan that comes with looping shots and comes forward, no head movement, but really, really is just going to take you down to the trenches to see whether or not Andy Lee can get dirty. It was a back-and-forth war. Both of these guys were having their moments. Andy Lee was landing some really hard, significant down the pipe from the outside on Vera. But Vera, you know, pressure and putting the pressure on Andy just showed that it was a little bit too much for him, and you could see he was gassing out. His hands were just really literally down when Andy Lee's kind of style is the jab, but jab from the hip, not jab from the elbow, jab from the hip. That meant he put his hand down to the hip, and he would jab from there, and Brian was able to really get some overloop, these over-the-top right hands that you really don't want to throw. You know what I mean? If you're a technician in boxing, because it leaves you open to counter shots. But he was being successful. And that pressure there was taking a lot out of Andy Lee. Not just those looping shots, but them inside body shots that were being tapped throughout the rounds, all the way from to the eighth round, were doing their damage and doing the telling of what was later on to be told in the story. And that was Andy Lee just falling apart, not really able to keep up his composure, and Vera was able to swing that win to his corner and walk away the victor.
I always kind of felt it was stopped a little early. I mean, if you look back at now Andy's history, particularly the Craig McEwen fight, where you know, he looked like he was done and you know, it was time to pull the plug, and boom, he comes out with a big KO win. But I remember when we had him on the show, he talked about how that was kind of one of the better things to happen to him. It kind of put him back into, you know, kind of prospect land, where he had to go and get some more experience, get a little more seasoning, age a little bit, and here he is again, you know. And I think it's the perfect time to do this fight. Vera is still a viable guy. He just had a nice win, and he's coming into this with a lot of confidence. It's not like Lehman Brewster and Vladimir Klitschko too, or that Chris Bird rematch where one fighter's done even though he has the win over the other guy. And the other guy's peaking. You know, Lee still looks vulnerable. He looked vulnerable in the McEwen fight. He's not a particularly strong middleweight. You know, he's got heavy hands. He's got that kind of power that turns everything around. And he's obviously very durable. But, you know, when it comes down to getting in close and clinching and pushing back and forth, I think Vera's got the edge in this. I mean, he's a guy that can fight at 168 and has. I'm curious to see what dropping down to 160 again is going to do to him in this fight. That's kind of the only, I think, big advantage that Lee has. Although, I question how he makes 160 himself. You know, he's a guy that's very skinny. There's not a lot of meat to him, not a lot of muscle to him when he makes that 160. So that might even cancel each other out. I think it's just going to come down to another dogfight, and whoever lands the good shots and whoever keeps, you know, gets hit with just a few less. Throughout the course of the fight, and whoever is able to get to the body, really, that's who's going to win this fight. I think it's a hell of a matchup, and it's a great undercard to, you know, what a lot of people are looking at as a fight we already know the outcome to in the main event. But it's a good fight.
Yeah, you know, and that's the thing that, see, this is the thing that I really like about this rematch here, is the first time around, like I said, this was a test for Andy Lee. This second time around, this is a test for Andy Lee again. And the reason why I'm saying it's a test for Andy Lee again is because it's basically trying to find out where really is he at now at this point. You know, Brian Vera is now coming in with a confidence build, being in with Serge Mora, being in with the other guys, and really having the better names on the ledger when we talk about being put as an opponent. He's been fighting some pretty good, well-known fighters out there. So, Brian, having the success of getting a split decision over Mora, having the success of continuing not losing. I mean, he lost right after Andy Lee, and that was to James Kirtland. You know, he stopped on the eighth round. But he lost to Max Bursak in the Ukrainian. But right after that, he continued his split decision, and in the end of getting a TKO on the eighth round over Eloy Suarez. And so that confidence build is there for him, you know. And then
Sergio Mora, too. That split decision win, I think, is huge for him.
It was a huge, yeah, definitely a huge confidence build for him. So it's a test for Andy, but at the same time, it's really a test for Vera in finding out, where he's at. Is he a C-class, B-class? Well, you got to say, you got to take him out of the category of C-class. People will probably still refer him as B-class at this moment, but I think if he's able to stop Andy Lee again, it now puts him up a little bit higher, even though we stopped him before. But you could argue the fact that, well, stopping Andy Lee in the beginning of his, he only had 15. I think Andy Lee only had 15 wins at that time as an undefeated fighter. You know, but beating him now where he's a little bit more polished and probably a little bit more comfortable, and we've seen him in some back-and-forth wars, you know, we've seen him really dig deep into himself to pull a win, this would be a big, significant victory for Brian Vera, you know?
I think so, and in a lot of ways, it's kind of winner go home. You know, that's basically the thing for Andy Lee here. If he loses, where does he go? You know, it just turns down to, it just comes down to, he's got to win this fight. Because, I mean, he's going to end up, you know, if you can't beat Brian Vera, then why are you a candidate for Sergio Martinez or Dmitry Pirog, Gennady Golovkin? Any of the top guys that, you know, Pirog and Golovkin have like prospect records, but they've got belts.
Right.
And, you're more of a contender who's been kind of on the fringes. You had this big shot. Everybody was touting you as your first main event. I think he'd been on a main event before, but not on TV. It was on ESPN with that first Brian Vera fight. Everything, the stage was set for him to win and move forward, and he lost. And
right.
If he does it again, I don't really, you know, as much as I like Andy, he's a great guy, and he's a fun boxer to watch, but, you know, where do you go if you can't beat Brian Vera? It's not, you know, a diss on Brian Vera. He's a tough, solid fighter, but he's not an elite guy. He hasn't held a belt yet. You know, maybe this is a late career surge and he wins, and then, you know, we put Vera in the mix with, Matthew Macklin. That's a really
exactly.
fun fight. You do that on a Boxing After Dark or something like that, or even an ESPN level fight. So those are that's you know, Brian winning is not a bad thing, you know, for anybody but Andy Lee. It's an interesting fight. You know, it's a late career surge for Brian Vera, and kind of the last chance saloon, you know, to actually kickstart this career and really get it going and get into those fights with meaning for Andy Lee. But I think it's a hell of a fight. It's a crossroads fight, which are always fun.
You know, and that's the thing. I don't know if it's a crossroads fight for Brian Vera. He might just end up going back to being an opponent and a tough opponent, kind of a gatekeeper kind of guy. But for Andy Lee, it's a really a do or die situation. And I think every fight along the way, because even his last fight, with Craig was a do or die. Where does he go from here? He needed that win. I think it goes along that lines until he gets to Sergio Martinez, whether or not what's going to continue off of his career, man. But you know what? I want to talk about what they need to do in order to secure themselves a victory between both men. They're going to be facing each other on Saturday night in Atlantic City. You know, the one thing is that the fun thing is this. If you go back to ESPN and you can go on YouTube, or if you recorded it, and I'm such a boxing nerd, is that I literally record every single fight. It doesn't matter if it's on Fox versus ESPN, Galavision, which they don't even host anymore fights as much as they used to, all the way down to Solo Book Sale. I put it on VHS tape. Yes, I don't use DVD. Okay. The reason why I don't use DVD because it scratches and stuff. So I go back to VHS and I record all my fights. You know, there was a lot of stuff that you could look at that fight and you could sit there, Gabe, right? And you could go, okay, who's improved and who hasn't? Who has kind of stayed into that pocket of being the same guy? And that's why I always kind of like these kind of rematches, because you go back and you look at that first match and you go, you know what? There hasn't been a whole lot of change, you know, and you're kind of hoping, you're sitting back. I hope it doesn't change. I hope it does pick up from the eighth round and go off of there, because you got Brian Vera, who doesn't use his a very good head movement. He kind of walks in, but he does crouch and try to get low to get up in the middle of your chest. And he likes to bang, you know, in the pocket. Where Andy Lee, he made the mistake of not having any answers. He had a good uppercut in that second, third round, but he didn't throw it frequently. He was really reserved in throwing that left uppercut. He's a southpaw, left uppercut. This time around, I think if he went back and looked at the tape, I think he should sit there and go, you know what, I could have used it more. For one, it could have stopped Brian from closing in that gap. You know what I mean, Gabe? When the guy's coming in, he gets low, and he's trying to walk in the pocket with you, you stop him by throwing some uppercuts. That's how you keep him at bay, because Andy Lee having that really long arm length, that's where we pretty much want to keep him, is on the tip of that arm length. And that's where he was successful in the first fight for the first, 4 to 5 rounds. He was keeping Brian at the outside. But he's got to understand that Brian is going to get in that inside. And when he gets to that inside, he can't shell up. Brian was being successful with body shots. Brian was being successful when Andy Lee pulled out. He was throwing that over-looping right hand, and he was doing a great hell of a job. There's a lot of things that Andy Lee could have done and should have done in their first fight. This time around, it's a great way of redeeming it, because he had a chance to really sit down and watch their ESPN showdown.
Yeah, that's the thing. You know, I always look at that. Who could improve? Who could fight a better fight? And at the time, I thought it was Andy. You know, you always hear about him sparring with Vladimir Klitschko. You know, he was kind of owning Jermaine Taylor and Kermit Cintron when they came to the gym. You know, Manny Stewart always described him as the king of the croc. You know, you had to get through him in order to kind of get a place within that gym and a place of respect. And then when you see him in the fights, and, you know, I've seen a lot of Andy's fights, you know, overseas, you know, downloading stuff. He always looks good then, but then when all the lights are on, and it's HBO or it's ESPN, there's always kind of something missing. And I always look and say, you know, where's the guy I kept hearing about? And in that first Brian Vera fight, I was thinking the same thing. It's like he's fighting a much tougher fight, the kind of fight that, you know, I believe in my power and that's all I need. Where was the defense? Where was the movement? Where was the craftiness that I had heard about? And I think in this fight, it's going to behoove him to move, take it a little bit deeper, you know, get to the body a little bit and keep Brian coming towards him and walking into stuff. Because, you know, Vera, like you said, he's not great at any one thing, but he's very good at a lot of little things, a lot of different phases of the game. He can fight on the outside a little bit. He's definitely good on the inside, knows how to muscle. His defense is suspect. He does walk right in, and he'll take way too many plus shots. But we also kind of found out the answer to the question, and the, you know, the most important question for a puncher is, can this guy take my punch? And he seemed to be able to take Lee's punch in that first fight. So I'm really curious, you know.
Well, he did it. He was able
out,
to get.
You know?
He was able to. Andy Lee was able to drop Vera in that first round, and it was off of the left hand, but he was from that distance that we're talking about that he needs. You know what I mean? It's a distance that Andy Lee needs to keep Brian Vera, and it was off of the jab. That's one thing that I saw from that first fight where Andy Lee just really just kind of started to neglect. You know, he started he was jabbing from the elbow, and it just kind of started just gradually falling down to that hip. And he's notorious for that. You know what I mean? He's a guy that he starts off very, very well with the jab, but then later down the line, he likes to drop the jab down. He becomes kind of lazy with it, you know. He starts becoming too comfortable with a rhythm that doesn't suit him well. You saw it with his last fight with Alex Bunimia, and you saw it with Craig. He likes to drop that right hand, and then he kind of uses the right hand to really fill himself out. And that kind of allowed Vera to kind of close that gap pretty quick. Where in that first round, he was snapping the jab. It kept Vera at the tip of that jab. And that was able to make enough room to have enough turn. Because being over 6 foot, you got to have that leverage. You got to be able to turn your body to have that extra snap. And that's what was really successful with that left hand. That's what started the whole thing for Vera to be dropped. But after that, I think you're right, absolutely right, Gabriel. He started believing in that power, and that's what happened, is that he decided to throw out the technical skills that he did and supposedly was supposed to bring in that fight.
Yeah, that's the thing, you know. And I, like, you know, I said, I wonder, it's been a long time since that loss. You know, he's had, like, you know, over, like, 12, 13 fights since then, and a lot of the guys he's beaten are not, you know, they're kind of also-rans. They're kind of, you know, 27-10, Troy Rowland or Troy Lowry, Michael Walker, although that was, you know, it took him 8 rounds and he got him out of there. And a lot of these fights have been happening for Lee at 162, 166, a few of them, or a couple of them. He hasn't really, I think it only was that Alex Bunimia fight that he just went the distance in back in May that was a straight 160 fight. Even the McEwen fight was not a 160 fight.
Right.
You know, when they look at Vera's record, he's been more of a, you know, 168, 161. He's kind of doing the same thing. I wonder, you know, what making 160 is going to really do for these guys in this fight. Who's going to be able to take that weight? And, you know, who's going to be able to handle it down the stretch? I mean, Vera's not much older. He doesn't have many more fights. He's only got, like, 24 fights. He's got 27. He's actually got more fights. But it's really, you know, it's the styles and the kind of damage that they've taken along the way. You know, it is kind of weird that Andy's got
And
more.
who's taken more damages, you know what I mean? It looks like Andy is the guy that's got more mileage in those wheels, you know what I mean?
Well, he's got more rounds. You know, he's got 144
right.
rounds to 135 rounds. It's kind of close. But, you know, Vera is more of a grinder. You know, he's been stopped twice. You know, out of his last seven, he's won three of them. The other ones were kind of close losses or a stoppage loss to James Kirkland. And that was back in 2008. He hasn't been particularly active, whereas Lee has been very active throughout this period. So, you know, again, it's just it's going to be who's a little bit better on the night, you know, who's got a little bit better game plan. I think both of them are so flawed, it's going to be the guy that has just a little bit better game plan, minds his defense just a little bit more, trained just a little bit harder.
And who kind of fine-tuned.
Yeah.
And I think it really got the same thing, you know, game plan, but at the same time, who really fine-tunes their skill, you know, their mistakes. For instance, you know, Brian Ver, he's got a really big habit of looping that right where he kind of musters up his power from that. But at the same time, when he loops it, he drops the right and he misses, he's off balance. So he's not really able to return a countering shot or a leading shot, you know, for missing. And that kind of left him open with Andy Lee. Andy was able to tee off of something like that. The other thing goes back is that Vero was able to get tapped, you know, with some really significant punches from Andy Lee because he doesn't slip punches. He pulls his head back. I don't know if you noticed that. He did that even with Mora. He pulls his head back. He doesn't slip him. He doesn't try to avoid him. What he does is he'll have his guard up to protect the chin, but then he pulls his chin away from that guard, believing he's going to avoid those shots. And that's something that down this line here and this with this rematch between the two, both of these guys, Lee's going to have, again, success with some punches, you know. And even though he showed true grit with Andy Lee the first time around, you got to sit there and go, can he do it again? Can he hold up to those big shots that Andy Lee was dropping on him? If I was personally in his corner, I would say, look, we know you got a chin, but why continue trying to go for the bat? Makes no sense.
Yeah, that's the thing. You know, I mean, Andy's kind of really mix it in. And I think that's the thing I'm really looking for is the off-speed pitch for him to be kind of jabbing, and then mix in that hard shot, you know, in the midst of a combination. Whereas before, it seems like he just throws as hard as he can. He telegraphs a little bit because of that. And he really depends on those shots. And granted, it worked against McEwen. Eventually, all that stuff added up.
Right.
To you know, to a knockout. But will it work against Vera? Will he get the chance? And is he going to be able to take those shots from Vera? I mean, Vera had him pretty hurt. Andy has a habit of kind of using that shoulder roll a little bit too much, because I don't think he's very good at it a lot of the time. And he'll take shots, not so much flush, but he'll take them up high on the head. He'll take them in odd spots. And those have an effect after a while and make you drunk, and then we'll get you knocked out.
Yeah.
So it's just going to be a good fight. I think it's going to be knocked down, drag out, kind of like we saw with, you know, Rodriguez and Pavel Wolak. It's going to be that kind of fight, and it's just going to come down to, you know, who ran that extra mile.
Absolutely. You know, and that's the thing, too, with Andy Lee is that Brian Vera, when he does get in close, he's got to remember with that first fight, and I think he knows better than anybody else, Brian mixed it up. He worked that body. He'd worked the top of the head when they're in close. He made it a physical fight. And Andy Lee's got to really go back and look at his jab and say, okay, these are the things that I fell apart on, not using that jab properly, not following up when he did throw the left hand. He didn't follow up with a right hook, you know, which he was getting some success. Brian Vera is at the same time throwing the looping right. He tends to admire if he lands it. You know what I mean? Like, he throws that looping right, he's off balance, then he kind of stops and pauses and looks like a deer with headlights coming at him to see whether or not if he landed or if he was successful on it. He doesn't return anything. This time around, it's an open shot there with Andy Lee. It's throw the right hand, but don't be off balance. Throw it, and then finish it off with a left hook because of the fact that Andy Lee likes to drop his right hand and kind of rest it on his hip. Those are some of the things that both of the men are going to have to look at. Let's pass it to some fight fans, man, who want to talk boxing here on Leaving the Ring and see what their take is. And then we'll get in a little bit and talking about Martinez versus Barker. Also, Matarossian is supposed to text me and let me know. Originally, they were scheduled to be on the show, but now something has came up. He says he's got to get the approval of his manager. So we're trying to wait here and find out whether or not they're going to allow him to come on Leaving the Ring and talk to us about what he was saying on Twitter. You know, I mean, they pulled out of the Angulo fight in Mexico and was saying, you know, because of the money wasn't right. But all of a sudden, that tone quickly changed on, again, a social network called Twitter, saying, hey, I'll sign it now. F the money. Let's make it happen. I want to fight you immediately. Don't fight Kirtland. But now, and then, you know, I hit him up. I said, yo, I'd love to hear your take, man. I want to find out what you're talking about here and why the change of heart. He was scheduled to be on today, but I, like I said, I got a text saying that. Got to get approval from the manager. I did invite the manager to come on the show. Also, too, we got Dmitry Pirog, who a lot of us hardcore fight fans are saying he may be the threat to Martinez, even though Martinez has got a valiant opponent in front of him from the UK, Darren Barker. But a lot of us are saying Pirog, who had a great sensational fight in Russia with Moderosian, not the one we're talking about coming on the show, but had a great fight. I think it was 10 rounds of some brutal, really class act boxing between the guys, even though there were some things in there that we probably want to talk about and break down here at Gabriel on Leaving the Ring. Then a little later after that, we got Lamont Peterson talking about in December, facing Amir Khan. Hit him up today just because some fans were asking to hear from Lamont Peterson. But let's patch in some fight fans. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598, you can speak to myself, Dave Duenas, or Gabriel Montoya here on Leaving the Ring. Let's go with our boy CT. What's up, brother? You're on live right now on Leaving in the Ring.
Hey, how you guys doing tonight?
Good, man. How you doing?
All right, I'm all right. I just want to first start off by saying I think style wise, definitely Pirog will definitely be a threat for Martinez, and I think Lou DiBella knows that because every time he gets asked about that, he goes crazy. I noticed that, you know what I mean?
Did you notice that?
Oh, yeah. And I was actually there for Andy Lee versus Craig McEwen and Martinez versus Zanzirik.
Right.
I also noticed Andy Lee, you know, I kept telling my girlfriend, she was sitting next to me, he keeps, you know, letting Craig get inside. And I was going for Andy Lee in that fight, and he, you know, his power bailed him out at the end, but he was getting beat, you know what I mean? I do agree with you guys in this fight. Bear is definitely going to get inside because that's, you know, he knows how to get inside very well. It's up to Andy Lee to keep him outside, like you guys are saying, you know, just use his jab, use his length. I'm looking probably for Andy Lee to get the revenge and maybe a late stoppage or a decision. But it's going to be a very tough fight. It's because Bear is going in there with more confidence. You know, he knows he's already won. So it's going to be interesting.
Is there is this with Brian Vera. This is what I'm a little bit concerned, because he had the edge in that first fight. He went in, he fought a prospect, a guy that really honestly was being considered to move on to the next level. Brian was the guy he had to pass the test with, and he flunked it. Mm-hmm. Now, whether or not this time around, whose test is it for this time around on Saturday night? Vera going in knowingly knowing, hey, I got through the best this guy was able to storm at me. And I was able to weather something he was not used to or hadn't yet faced. Is he going in with a little bit too much confidence, believing that I had enough power, I had enough in the tank to take him out? If he believes that, I say that he may be walking into a pretty big shot. I say he has to go back to that special night of him going, you know what, I'm facing the top guy, I got to go out there and I got to impress. That's what he's got to go in the mind frame. Go in the mind frame as the opponent. I'm going in to prove myself again. Not go in there and go, well, he's my test. Because that there, to me, kind of leads him where the flaws that he has, he makes them makes him greater, not lesser.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it makes it very dangerous. Do you guys know, because I noticed Emmanuel Stewart wasn't there for Andy Lee and the Craig McEwen fight. Is he going to be there Saturday night or no?
I believe he will be, from what I understand, he will. But that's not totally confirmed. But from what I understand, he was going to be there for that one. Because there's no I'm pretty sure he's not working the – he might work the main event of the HBO card, but, I think they'll let him go work his corner for the fight. But I've been trying to get a hold of Manny all this week, and no go. So
no go, yeah.
I'll find out, and I'll post it on my Twitter if I can get it confirmed by tonight.
Okay. Yeah, I think this is also interesting because this is the, you know, second time I've seen Andy Lee on Martinez's undercard. I wasn't sure, you know, if they had him lined up to fight Martinez next, but you know, I guess not. But if he wins, Saturday, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I think the reason they do that is because he draws well over there on the East Coast.
Right.
He's fought there a few times, and they got to shore up. You know, Martinez is, I think, catching on over there, but the word is that, you know, the tickets aren't selling very well.
Right.
You know, they're doing some kind of weird, you know, almost don't want to dignify it by mentioning it, but, you know, having a porn star at the weigh-in or the media workout and taking pictures that way. I mean,
what's wrong with that?
I think it's trashy, dude. I got to be honest. I think it's really trashy. And seriously, for a guy that has banked his whole image on, I help battered women and I go see kids at hospitals, to be taking pictures with a porn star kind of just negates that. I mean, I know we're all guys here or whatever, but I mean, there's just, you never see a
woman getting battered on camera, but getting paid
for
it, you know?
I mean, but you also, you don't, you never see, like, Manny Pacquiao or, you know, Floyd Mayweather's got his own issues, but you don't see them on camera with you know, a porn star, you know, and the only way you see that with Oscar De La Hoya is if the photos are leaked, you know, so. Full shot there. Sorry, Oscar. I kid him. And it's usually him that's dressed up. But, you know, you don't see that with Martinez. And you're trying to build an image. You're trying to build this, I'm a total gentleman and a man's man, what that used to mean. And you're taking pictures with a porn star. It just kind of, you know, it just doesn't work. It just doesn't work. I think it was a terrible idea, and I thought it looked. It made
who came
them look
up with that idea, cheap. First off? I mean,
I don't know, but it made them look cheesy.
It did. Yeah. It did. And I saw a lot of fans that were kind of disturbed about it. But at the same time, you know what? We can go back to, I can't remember the heavyweight's name. Oh, God. And he was, at the time, I believe, I want to say he was going to be fighting Muhammad Ali. It'll come to me right now. The heavyweight went down to the very first original Bunny Ranch, you know, and he was hanging out with prostitutes, say, call girls, escorts, what, I don't know. What's the professional name to call them now? And you know, did it help
out?
It's
pleasure technicians. I think that's what we called them.
Pleasure technicians. But, you know, it did it help out his image? Did it help out promote that fight? In a lot of ways, back in that time, it didn't do anything because nobody really cared about it, you know? And I think that what it comes down to with Sergio Martinez, I mean, really honestly, male fight fans, do you really care that Ann Rose was there watching him prepare to fight Darren Barker? No, I think a lot of us are more concerned about, well, who he's going to fight after Darren Barker because of the fact that he has been calling out men that are a lot smaller than himself, but at the same time been saying I'll fight bigger guys at a cage catch weight too.
But the group I'm not worried about, I mean, men are men. We love to watch men beat the hell out of each other, and a big part of that is also watching the ring card girls and hooting and hollering. And, you know, I've certainly made jokes about the ring card girl, but the demographic that he could get, that he should be going after, is women. That's what Oscar brought to the table. He filled the place with women, which don't normally come. And Martinez was kind of building that. I don't think this is the end of that, but it certainly kind of makes, I think, all the women fans that looked at him and said, look what a gentleman he is, and he dresses nice, and, oh, he helps the battered women, and he goes and sees the kids in the hospital, and then, burn, like, you know, the needle scratches off the record, and you got a porn star.
Oscar De La Hoya was accused as a rapist. Did it stop female fans to tune in to watch him fight? No. You know what I mean?
They kept it pretty quiet. Yeah, that's true, and, you know, Floyd certainly has got his issues with women, allegedly, and you know, women do go watch.
I think it boils down. Continue winning. This is what it really boils down. Continue winning, and guess what? Whatever your lifestyle, whatever you bring, it's always going to be in question. But it's never going to stop that person from tuning in to watch what you're going to do in the ring, because winning always brings people to want to see what you're going to do next, female or male or not. That's what it comes down to. That's the reality of it.
Yeah, if I could, can I talk about the Martinez and Barker fight?
Oh, no, you
sure.
Can't. Go ahead, CC.
I actually think, you know, Martinez, you know, might be a little bit too fast for this guy. Even though Barker, to me, doesn't fight like a, you know, a traditional European fighter. He's a little tricky himself. But I just think, you know, Martinez's speed and his timing will probably get to him, and I think it will probably be a mid-stoppage. And then hopefully Martinez can go on to fight Pirog next. I think that's definitely a challenge for him.
I wouldn't say it's next. I would love to see it next, quite honestly.
Yeah.
But I think if HBO is smart, and I would tend to think that they are not going to be the way Ross Greenberg was. I think we're seeing a trend in the action fights that they're picking.
Right.
You know, I mean, look at you know, Kirkland versus Angulo, and the undercard is Peter Quillen versus Craig McEwen. You know, and they're starting to feature the middleweights a little bit more, or that 154, because I think, you know, Kirkland and Angulo could certainly go to 160, no problem at all, and they'd probably be happy to do it, to take on Martinez. But you're starting to see these midweights kind of heat up. I would predict that we will see Pirog, maybe not by the end of the year, but by the beginning of the year. We'll see him on HBO, either in a co-feature or like an HBO Boxing After Dark main, maybe against Matthew Macklin. Mm-hmm. I think that's a hell of a fight. And then the winners of that, maybe fights the winner of the Angulo-Kirkland fight. You know, we start to build somebody for Martinez to fight against. In the interim, I don't know what Martinez does. You know, maybe they lure Daniel Gill over here, or Gill, however you say his name, and you get that fight on. There's going to be, I think, a lot more movement and a lot less of a problem just from what I'm looking at, what I'm hearing. The same problem they had before of who does he fight next, I think that goes away. I mean, you could even throw Arislandi Lara in the mix with Martinez, move him to 160. Why the hell not? He could handle the weight. I'd love to see Pirog next, but I would love to see it when it's been built towards a little bit.
I'd love to see a middleweight tournament of all the guys that we've seen right now. You know what I mean? Who, regardless,
informal.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. CT, I'm going to put you on hold, brother. We got to let some other fight fans on into the conversation, brother.
All right.
Thanks for calling, bro. Stay on hold.
Thanks for the call, man. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Let's get in some other fight fans. Let's see Junior, who wants to talk. Sergio Martinez. What's up, brother? You're on live right now, leaving the ring.
Hey, how you doing, guys? I just want to talk about Sergio. You know, I like him as a fighter a lot. He's a great fighter, and, you know, I like his style. It's a really good style, and I think that, you know, it's not wrong for him to, you know, want to fight Manny and Floyd. It's not because, you know, they went up to 154, you know. And,
right.
You know, if they fought De La Hoya and he fought, Floyd fought De La Hoya, so he should be able to fight Sergio Martinez. And if Manny fought Margarito, he should be able to fight Sergio Martinez as well, you know. And a lot of people are, you know, knocking him that he's picking on these little guys, but the guy's 36 years old, you know. He needs that big paycheck, you know. Because, you know, we all know that boxing, you know, once that money's gone, it's gone. You know, it doesn't come back. And, you know, I don't blame him for cashing out because he's already old, and you don't never know when he's going to turn old overnight. You know, he has that type of style that it could just go bad. Like, it just spoils, like, you know, from one fight to the next. What do you guys take on it?
Well, I don't really, you know, like Martinez mentioned this is the thing. You know, if you come into a division, it's been my problem with both Manny and Floyd, they particularly when they jumped to 154. They cherry-picked, you know, the biggest name they could get at the time, you know, Margarito for Manny and Oscar for Floyd. They weren't necessarily the best fighters. They were the guys they could make the most money with, and Floyd really needed that to push himself to the next level. Oscar was still a viable name, even though he was done, even by his own admission, finally. If you're going to go in that division, you're going to pick up a belt, and you're going to call yourself an 8-division champion or a 6-division champion and include that division. But then all of a sudden when a guy wants to meet you there and says, I'll do it at 150 or 154, suddenly you don't want to do that because he's a bad style matchup. I think that looks bad on you. And
right.
Manny's the one that wanted to move up to that weight and be there. I actually think he's too small for Sergio, without question.
Right.
But why'd you go to the division then? You know,
yeah.
It's sort of like,
yeah, exactly.
Why do you have a belt if you don't want to fight the best guys and you want to hide behind it? Same thing with Berto. Why do you have a belt? You know, all those years that he didn't fight top guys, now he gets a pass because he acted like a real fighter, like a real champion, took on a good contender and did the same thing with Jan Zavik. You know, you can get to pass now. But to me, you know, okay, they had this great body of work before, and Floyd did just take on a young contender or a young champion, title holder, I guess.
Right.
Ortiz.
Victor Ortiz. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, but
I don't really see, you know, if you're going to come up to 154, like, why dip your toe in the water? Why not take on a real guy like Martinez?
Like back in the day with those guys.
The only thing I don't like is that in the beginning, Sergio was really stressing. Look, I am a really natural 154. I can't make 147. Now he's talking about making 150. I say, why give up all these perks for these guys' star power? I mean, these guys have gotten away, especially Manny Pacquiao, has gotten away with murder when it came down to his negotiation. You know, he's been able to strong-arm a lot of fighters to do what he wants. And to me, it's fair is fair, man. Make it equal. You know, you fought for 154. Go back and fight the guy, because that was a vacant belt that was originally wrapped around the waist of Sergio Martinez. Am I against him fighting these guys? Of course not. The only people that are against Sergio Martinez facing Manny Pacquiao and Floyd Mayweather are his fans.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, it's like back in the day when, you know, when we had Duran and all those guys. Once they went up, they didn't go back down. You know,
right.
The difference, though, with those guys, the only difference, though, I would say, is that the reason all those guys did fight each other is because they actually were draws, you know. And Martinez, unlike the other guys, because of the way he came up and how long it took him to get where he is, he doesn't really bring the same heat that a Duran brought to a Hearns, or a Hearns brought to a Leonard, and a Leonard brought with Hagler. That's the only catch is that, yeah, he's just as, you know, I don't know if he's just as good as those old-time guys, but we've got a group of guys that could give us that kind of round-robin that we got with you know, with the Fabulous Four. But the problem is that in this day and age, and the way the market is, Bob Arum, who was very critical of Lou DiBella, I think today he made a statement saying, you know, look at the way this guy's marketing Martinez. He's not spending any money. He could take $50,000 and take out an ad in the, you know, New York Times or something, and do something special with the guy. And I agree with that. He, you know, Lou is not marketing Martinez well at all. He's moving him well, getting him on the network. He's moved him to titles, but he's also moved him out of titles. You know, he's got to take that criticism too. They lost that Zivic fight. You know, they could have done that somewhere else if he wanted to spend his own money. And he was like, why would I do that? Why would I sell it to the fans? Like, well, you wanted to sell it to us on HBO. Why wouldn't you want to sell it to us any other way? And so that's the problem, is that Floyd and Manny don't need Martinez. He needs them. And he doesn't bring anything to the table other than we want to see the fight to make that fight happen. He could say, I'm going to cut off both legs and my head, and I'll only use my right hand, and they still wouldn't want to do the fight with him. They just have no interest in doing it because it doesn't get them anything. Even Miguel Cotto said it last week when, and I think, you know, there are people that are kind of inserting Martinez into different situations, one person in particular that kind of keeps pushing the Pacquiao question. But he said to Cotto, like, what about Sergio Martinez, you know? And Martinez, or Cotto, looked at him and said, you know, do you really think that Martinez brings me the kind of money that Pacquiao does, or Floyd Mayweather does, or Margarito does? He just doesn't. And so he's kind of shut out. And until
I like Cotto, too. Sucks.
I like him, too. But, you know, until Lou really does something with this guy, I think we're either going to be really frustrated watching this, or he's going to have to figure out another way. He's going to have to take out all the other middleweights.
The problem with Lou, man, is that he can't take criticism. He can't take, you know, suggestions. It's got to come directly from him. And so, in other words, you got to basically suggest an idea and kind of veer it or boomerang it, making him believe it's his idea. You know what I mean? Like, it's your idea. And he'll be like, yeah, that's a good idea. Yeah, that is my idea. That's the only way I could see him really making any kind of change for Sergio Martinez's career, man.
I can only imagine, like, what Sergio would have been if he was found a lot earlier, you know, because he's, you know, I mean, no homo or anything, but he's a really good-looking guy. He gets, like, you know, some, you know, American top model.
I've been hearing that a whole lot, man. I've been, no homo. I've heard that a lot from a lot of Twitter fans and stuff, guys that on Twitter or on Facebook.
He's kind of funny. He is that guy that he's good-looking enough, and you kind of go, you know, I could see it. You know, I could see why the ladies like him. And, you know, I think only a really secure man is able to say that about another guy, and I think we're all good.
See why the ladies are upset that he's hanging around with a porno star, you know what I mean? And it's like, it kind of, he's kind of a guy that looks so humble that, and plus he's a fighter, if you can make him into a husband. So when you see him going out there, being entouraged by porno stars, it kind of just diminishes the whole wholesome and husband image.
Yeah, I don't think he had. I don't think he had much with that OG. I think it was more on Lou. You know, he just brought her in last minute. He's like, "What the fuck?" You know what I'm saying? Like, this chick.
Right.
So, because I mean, he does seem like the humble dude, and you know, he did all that. You know,
he's a humble guy.
You know, for battered women and all that stuff, and you know, this you know, prostitute comes out of nowhere, and he's like, "What?"
Well, the thing is that we hear about him being a humble guy. He's a humble guy, but he was married, and he was having marriage problems when he came over here to the U.S., and one of those rumors was about women. You know what I mean? When you have good looks like this guy, and you got celebrity potential, and you'll have a lot of eyes on you because you're the king of the middleweight division, women come along that lines of being in the position he's in. Ask Oscar De La Hoya.
Yeah, we all know that, yeah.
Well, it's funny. It's the same thing when a lot of women I knew said, you know, I couldn't believe this about Tiger Woods. How could he sleep with all those women?
How could he not?
I thought it was a nice guy. Well, I thought, well, how could he sleep with so many ugly women? But, you know, the thing is, everybody kind of freaked out, and it was like, wasn't Tiger, you know, he had an image, but at the end of the day, he's just another man.
Right.
You give another man, you give any man $300 million, they're probably not going to be faithful, and they're probably going to sleep around a lot. That's just the nature of that beast. And so
of that beast,
again, Martinez for marketing himself with a porn star. I mean, but at the same time, it's a mixed message with his image. He was a squeaky clean guy who sticks up for battered women and goes to shelters and helps the children. And then here you are with a porn star. I'm like, well, which image are you trying to portray, man? Like, get your freak on. I don't care. But do it quiet.
Do it subtle. You know what I mean? Be a little subtle about it. I understand that.
Yeah.
At the same time, you know, hey, sometimes subtle is not, it's not understandable. And when you have every woman coming out from every corner. You know what I mean? So I think that's what he fell into. Anyways, hey, Junior, thanks for calling in, brother. I got to put you on hold. We got to let other folks.
Thanks for taking my call.
No problem, bro.
Bye. Bye.
At the same time, we've had Junior on. I've been texting Mr. Vince Matarossian to find out whether or not he's going to come on the show. I have not heard back from him. So I'm thinking we're having Pirog call in about, 6:15 here, Gabriel? He's going to be coming on with
us. Somewhere in there, yeah. We'll be ready for him at 6. And
so we'll continue.
Go.
Right. So I think we should continue with our talk about Martinez and Barker. I think a lot of folks are still on hold right now. They want to talk about this fight that's happening Saturday night. Along with with that fight, you're also going to have Rafael Marquez, who's going to be fighting on Top Rack Stream. But let's pass it to some other fight fans. I do want to continue talking about Martinez and Barker because I feel a lot of fight fans are really undermining what Darren Barker is going to be bringing to the table Saturday night. Yes, do I think that Martinez is going to win? Yes, I do. I'm picking Martinez to win this fight. But to say it's easy, I'm not really sure. There are some things that Barker is bringing to that table that could really possibly cause problems for Martinez. Now, speed-wise, Martinez has got it. Southpaw stance, becomes comfortable, herky-jerky, you know it. The guy has it all when he's in his rhythm. But Barker has his own rhythm as well. And being that rhythm, we got to go back, and I got to take it back to the beginning of Sergio Martinez's career. But before I do that, we're going to patch in a very frequent caller, a good friend of ours here on Leaving Ring, my boy D, who wants to talk boxing here on Leaving Ring. What's up, brother? You're on live right now.
What's going on? What's going down, fellas? Yeah, hey. What his damn problem is, man, he too damn nice. He reminds me of Chad Dawson. First of all, you know what I'm saying, maybe he needs to show up at some of these press conferences and, try to get in some of these dudes' faces and or whatever. I don't know,
right.
man. I agree with you, though. He definitely is promoted to Bella. He ain't doing what he's supposed to be doing. That's what it looked like to me. This dude's badass, man. You should be getting this dude. He should be a household name by now.
Right, right.
It's kind of sad. It's kind of sad, man. I don't know. I don't know what he should do, man. I would start changing how you are. You know, I start calling some cats out. That's what I would be doing.
There's a couple ways. I mean, it's a hard thing to do to call people out and not look like you're begging. You know, when he knocked out Paul Williams, we were writing in my mailbag. People were like, what should he do? He should fight Pacquiao and Mayweather. And they start, you know, throwing out these names that, without using logic. And to me, you know, what I would have done if I were Martinez is just let everybody know that I'm the middleweight champion of the world. They can strip my belt. Fine. I'm still the middleweight champion of the world because you can't take it from me because I won it in the ring. You know, well, do
right.
you want to fight Pacquiao? Well, you know, he's got a belt at 154 and 147. I'm the middleweight champion of the world. If he wants my belt and wants my title, he knows where to find me. Same thing with Floyd Mayweather. I would remind them, yeah, he may be pound for pound, but I'm the middleweight champion of the world. And in my world, that's like the heavyweight crown of the middle divisions. Just like Haggard, just like Hopkins, Monzon, everybody else was the big stars underneath them, but who'd they have to come to if they really wanted to be the king? They got to
right.
come to the middleweight champion of the world. Instead of saying, well, I'll do 150, or let's do a catchweight of 155, let's work out a deal, you know, I'll sell you his leg, you know, you can tattoo an advertisement on his back. Like they're just treating him like, you know, like it's Earl Scheib. For $9.99, I'll paint your car. I mean, he's the middleweight champion of the freaking world. Show the guy some respect and give him the respect and demand that respect instead of going out and begging
right.
and find a better way to market right. your guy in the meantime. That's all I would be worried about. All this
Absolutely.
Stuff has really lowered him. You know, all these stupid videos that he does with that videographer reality show, it makes him look like an idiot. It's low budget. It's
right.
$2.50 TV. And it just makes him look like a $2.50 champion. And I'm one of Martinez's biggest supporters, but they're dropping the ball. You know, to quote Angelo Dundee, you're blowing it, son. And they are. They absolutely are.
80% of this shit falls on to Bella, I think, man. Come on, man. This dude's your bread and butter, I think. Y'all agree? That's his number one fighter right there. You know?
It's not Andre Berto, that's for sure. That's Al Heyman's fighter. Yeah, this is his guy. And I applaud Lou for doing what he did, for being the one guy that said, this dude's got talent and I can move him. And he moved him beautifully to the middleweight title. He's put him in our consciousness. Okay, now what? You can't keep telling me what you did last week. That's like me saying, well, I was really good in a production of Hamlet in Sacramento like 5 years ago. that doesn't really work in L.A. today. You know, that doesn't really do anything for anybody. What have you done for me lately? And lately, he's fighting Darren Barker, and you're not selling tickets
very
well.
See, that's the thing that, you know, what is a funny thing is that you hear people complain about Sergio Martinez needs to do this. Let's clarify this first off. He's fighting what is offered to him, okay? He was taken away from originally from HBO fighting in the summer. They told him, no, we're going to push that up a little bit more. So he gets who he has to face. This is not a guy right now, which he should be because he's the middleweight champion of the world, that could be in a position to pick who he wants. He's not. You know, he's basically has kind of fallen into what the suits are telling him what he needs to do next and what he should do next. And he's being humble enough, sitting there going like, oh, well, okay, I mean, if that's what you want me to do, I'm going to do that. You know, if this is the amount of money you're going to give me, let's go ahead and do that. You know, I hate to say this, but in a lot of ways, you're listening to a middleweight champion who answers like a peasant. He's not answering like a champion. You know, and I know that word is harsh. A lot of folks are not going to like that word. But this is the honest truth. You're listening to a guy that's just basically
right.
saying, I'm going to take what you got because I'm not from here. And that's BS.
Man.
You know?
It is hard because where do you put him? Because he's Argentinian. He's not Mexican. You know, and there's a lot of people. There's one guy, some quote-unquote promoter from the Midwest,
who's got like 10 followers. I'm like, oh, you're such a good promoter. You've got 10 followers. But he's sitting there telling me what I would do, what he should do with Martinez, and he's acting like Brown is Brown. And Brown just ain't Brown. You know, Mexicans hang out with Mexicans, and even within their own culture, you know, a guy like me who doesn't speak Spanish and acts like a quote-unquote white guy isn't necessarily the most welcome guy in East Los Angeles. That I may not fly there. Martinez is Argentinian. He's not going to fly in certain areas. I mean, granted, he's been in Oxnard for a while, and because of his style and you know, excitement kind of transcends everything. I think now people would kind of come in Southern California. But, you know, it's clear, you know, where do you put him? Where's the biggest market for Argentinians in the U.S.? How do you build this guy to a draw at age 36? When, you know, he's now an HBO fighter. They've made it very clear that they're not going to take that interim fight, which I completely disagree with. I mean, Marcos Maidana just fought in Argentina last weekend, and he'll probably fight again on HBO sometime this year. You got to take those interim fights and build yourself worldwide. It may not have a lot at the negotiating table, but it might translate into something. But being inactive and waiting around for that HBO date and that HBO-approved opponent ain't going to get it done.
No, it's not going to get it done. But I also think the reason why he is fighting in Atlantic City, where he doesn't draw a whole lot of fans, and I think a lot of folks are feeling that he should fight in the West Coast, it really boils down to his promoter. I think Lou DiBella just doesn't want to take the trip to California. You know, he doesn't want to get on that plane. I think he's more comfortable. It's a much easier ride for him to make it to Atlantic City. I don't know. I mean, there could be so many scenarios and so many – what can we do with Sergio Martinez?
Take him to the San Fernando Valley. There's a ton of porn stars there. Maybe you could market him that way.
Hey, Gabe.
Hey, you know who could probably promote him a lot better than Lou DiBella's? Bang Bros. They seem to
Bang Bros, Hey, Gabe, let me ask you something.
Not that I watch it, guys. Not that I watch it, but I'm just saying. Bang Bros, okay?
I'm on Facebook, man, on the regular, man, and I've looked at about 100 predictions, man. I think I counted like 7 or 8 people picking the Mandingo Warrior to beat this dude, man.
There's not many people picking him, is there? It's kind of like a foregone conclusion in people's minds. You know, and I spent a lot of time yesterday. I was talking with Angulo's camp, and they were we were trying to set up an interview for today. I think we'll have him next week. He's in Mexico City right now, getting ready with Beristain. He's acclimating
with Nacho.
With Nacho Beristain. He's going to be training with him there. I'm not sure if Daryl Hudson's actually going to go down there to Mexico City. I mean, it's kind of a rough place. But anyways, they even view it. You know, the person I was talking to, it wasn't like his trainer or him, but everybody's kind of like, this is a very tough fight. If they go into this fight thinking they're just going to knock James out, you know, we're going to have problems. And they admit that. And I'm telling you, look at all the factors in this fight. Angulo's fought a minute and a half in like 2 years, right? It's going to be 154. That's what I understand. He didn't look great making 154. James hasn't made it in a while. He's been like 158. Curious about those last 4 pounds. They may have come out to some agreement. I'm not sure yet. But Kirkland's been fighting a lot more often. I know he lost and he got blown out by a guy that doesn't punch, but you can't discount all the factors that led to that and the reason why he's now with Ann Wolf. And I thought it was very telling. It's a camp that usually calls me back pretty quickly. And I've been trying to get a hold of the Kirkland camp all this week, and other than his management, I can't get the fighter and I can't get Ann Wolf on the line. That tells me they have gone into just combat mode. They're in their camp. They're going to be real quiet. They're going to do their thing. They don't talk a lot.
That's
and
what you call camp coma.
Yeah,
you
know? it's going to be interesting, man. And you know, I would love to be able to fly down and at least see one of these guys in camp, but. You know, my homerism might take over. I might be that ninth guy that picks Kirkland to win. I'm not sure. You know, I want to wait till the last second. But, you know, I kind of came to the party with him. You know, I know I've been supporting Angulo or covering him lately, but I think it's a real live fight, man. And if it gets past 7 or 8, it's going to come down to the guy that minds their defense a little bit better, that, you know, is able to, that maybe is better conditioned
I mean, Angulo, you know, mm-hmm. 7 or 8 rounds, what's all that time off going to be like for him? You know, he's not
that's
a guy that blows up, but, you know, he stays in shape. But still, you know, there's shape and then there's fighting shape. And Kirkwood's mm-hmm. been in fighting shape a little bit longer. So, I don't know, man. I can't make a pick right now. It's too soon.
I don't know. I don't know if I agree on that about Kirtland being in fighting shape. He's been. Go ahead and jump off. Hey, D, I'm going to put you back on hold, okay, brother? Because we got our next guest coming on. Thank you, bro.
Right,
stay
man.
On hold.
Right.
Everybody else too, as well as that have been on hold here to want to talk here on Leaving the Ring, Mr. David Chen. Check the board. We got a few callers that don't know whether or not they want to talk boxing or if they have a question here for us here on Leaving in the Ring. But fighting shape, I'm not really sure, man. I got to go back with Angulo. I think he's more in fighting shape at the moment. Gabriel?
We are back, and I'm here with Dmitry Piron, the WBO middleweight title holder, and along with his translator, Vadim. Welcome to the show, guys.
Thank you. Thank you, Gabriel. We appreciate you inviting us.
Oh, my pleasure. I know you guys just got off a plane. You just got here from Russia, headed out to Atlantic City, so I appreciate it. I'll start off. You guys just had a hell of a fight. And we'll get to the fight in a minute, but I'm curious why you decided to come out to Atlantic City for the middleweight title fight between Barker and Martinez.
Вы очень хороший бой, я очень доволен. Он хотел первый вопрос задать, почему ты решил перелететь на бой Баркер Мартинес в Atlantic City? Прежде всего, мне интересно, потому что я увлечен рано или поздно бой между мной и Мартинесом, если мы проиграем, состоится.
You know, you had the big win over Danny Jacobs, and it seemed like you should just go right back on HBO, but you've had to go back to Russia and fight a couple times. Has that been frustrating for you?
У тебя был очень хороший год, у тебя была большая победа на HBO. После такой победы, по идее, ты должен был сразу вернуться на HBO, но ты уехал в Россию и провел 2 боя там. Как для тебя это... как-то... А что ты думаешь по этому поводу и как тебе это на тебя влияет?
По поводу вопрос готов, ответ на этот вопрос всегда готов. Я пытался на HBO и дал в Америке, потому что для меня это приоритет. Всегда стоял в Америке. Там, я об этом все я знаю, как я знаю, я везде, и в принципе. Но так как все дается, и так не дается, и просто ничего не отпишет за свои России, обычно. Поэтому дело не во мне. Именно то, что мне 15 год назад я делал, не заинтересован. Чиганский тут
не My answer to the question is always ready because I've been asked this question many times. And my answer is always the same. You know, ever since the Danny Jacobs fight, I thought that I did what HBO expected, you know, and what my American fans expected from me. And I showed a great, exciting fight. And I was, you know, all my fans here in America, and, you know, in all my interviews, everybody tells me that they want to see me again. And my priority, as I've always said, has always been to try to get back on, you know, on American TV and fight for my American fans as well. But so far, I have not been offered a fight on that I can perform on American TV. So that's why I have to go back to Russia and defend my title there. But hopefully, you know, as people, as my fans and the press, as the American TV networks see that I'm defending my title, I'm fighting everybody that I have to fight, taking all the opponents that I can take. Hopefully, they'll realize that, you know, I'm one of the top fighters in the division, and that I should be fighting in America on HBO or any other network.
I'm going to turn it over to my co-host, David Duenas, who's here with me. Dave?
How you guys doing, man? I appreciate you guys coming on the show. Dimitri, your fight this past Saturday was sensational. You had a chance to get in there with a guy that really resembled a lot of Arthur Abraham, Matarossian. Now, you dropped him in the eighth round, but the referee didn't count it. And it seemed like you guys were slipping all over the place on that canvas. But you kept your composure. But in reality, how much did it get underneath your skin, or did it interrupt your pace in the way you were boxing?
Был очень красивый бой, показал отличный бокс в субботу. Вопрос заключается в этом. Вроде бы в восьмом раунде Матерасян, который очень был похож на Абрахама, армянина с Германии, вроде бы он упал в восьмом раунде и не засчитали нокдаун. Это первый вопрос. И второй вопрос. Вы были очень скользко. Как повлияло это на вас и насколько было сложнее боксировать? То есть, может быть, бой сложился как-то по-другому?
Прежде всего, Матерасян до боя и многие, кто там тренировались, уже там и промо-гармазин, даже смотрели. Один голос говорит, что в лучшей форме барьерован не будет никогда. И я почувствовал, надо ему отдать вкусное, что последний бой, последний раунд, который он выходил, решал максимально пошел в обман. По ходу боя я чувствовал, что бой, где я ему попадаю, и где-то возможно и добить. Но учитывая, что риск действительно был очень скользким, Приходилось, чтобы не подскользнуться, потом в ногах и сорваться сложно, поэтому подпросить. Но фактировали мы в одинаковых условиях, что немаловажно. И поэтому как сложилось, так сложилось. Но можно было крайне моментами и прибавить. Другое дело, что у Матерасяна не на тех боксеров, которые я бы чувствовал. Если прибавлять, не везде возможно попасть. Он из тех боксеров, которые в обиде ударов пропускает, когда руками защищает плотно, пропустит и руками ставит руки. А площадь попадания у него маленькая, руки крепкие, и дырки найти сложно. Поэтому моментами я не взрывал. А то, что где-то рейсере там не посчитал, нужно посчитать ему нокдауны. Но это на усмотрение рейсере. Я никому не имею никаких претензий.
First of all, I wanted to say that, Matarossian sparred with a lot of top-notch fighters. For example, Roman Karmazin, who's used to be a world champion from Russia. And a lot of these sparring partners said that, you know, they had a tough time with Matarossian, and he was in great, great shape. He really prepared for this fight, for his last fight. And he really wanted to make sure that he would be able to do his best, specifically in this world title fight that probably is his last chance, maybe. And I want to say that, you know, he was really doing well. And as far as the eighth round knockdown, I'm not really sure. I mean, it's up to the referee. Maybe there was a knockdown, but I really leave it up to the referee to count it on. But the canvas was very, very slippery. And the only thing is it was slippery for both of us, so I can't complain. It was, you know, we were fighting in the same exact condition. But I can't say that in certain times it was really difficult for me to, you know, to get a good concrete step on the ground in order to maybe finish the fight at some point. But on the other hand, you know, it still ended well. So I think that my fans got what they expected from the fight.
Yeah. You know what, for the record, he did drop, Pyrok dropped him on the eighth round. I thought the referee didn't call a lot of things, you know. He didn't do his job properly. I thought, in my opinion, I thought he did a very poor job in that fight. But, going away from that there, fight fans right now, you beat Dan Jacobs, you knocked him out, you had Matarossian, who's a known fighter, but not known to the American public. The one thing that a fight fans are not right now asking and questioning is that what makes you think that you're credible or ready for Sergio Martinez right now in your point in your career right now?
Can you repeat the last part that first before you said Sergio Martinez?
What's the reason that he thinks that right now he's in the position that he can face Sergio Martinez?
Got it. Вечно в этом раунде был нокдаун, что ты, ну, несколько ошибок совершал по прохождению боя. Ну ладно, это не важно. Он говорит, какая самая главная причина, почему ты думаешь, что ты можешь пробить Сергио Мартинес сейчас?
Одна из основных причин то, что где действительно со мной очень сложно драться, это прежде всего очень трудно, потому что мне есть много знакомых его стиль. То есть он моментами обескураживает боксеров, опуская руки, перемещаясь на ногах. Хорошо. Это он взял, видимо, находясь в то время, когда он находился, его карьера проходила в Европе. А мне это знакомо. У меня большой багаж опыта в боксировании с такими ребятами. И на такой манере. Поэтому меня он этим не обескураживает совсем. Потому что если надо, я могу так с ним побоксировать на такой манере. Вот я люблю показывать другой бокс, если коснется, у меня очень большой опыт.
I think that the main reason that I can have great success in the fight against Sergio Martinez is because in the last fight, I see that he takes advantage of his opponents by fighting in a certain style that he might have obtained experience in fighting when he was fighting in Europe. Moving on his feet, you know, dropping his hands. And some fighters are not ready for that, because he's able to take advantage of them. But I have a lot of experience fighting in that style. Even though usually I try not to fight in that, you know, more of an amateur style, I try to fight professionally, I try to fight standing up on the ground, you know, toe-to-toe type of a style. But I think Martinez knows that I can, if I need to, and if he tries to fight with me the way he fought with his last couple of opponents, that I won't be discouraged, and I'll be able to fight in the same style as well. And that's why I think that he understands that it would definitely be a tough fight. Considering my defense and everything, I don't think that it would be an easy fight for him. And I think it would be a really interesting fight for the fans.
Now, when you had the Maciel fight, you had a bit of an injury, I think, to your neck. And you seemed a little, your upper body movement, you seemed a little slower and less mobile in the upper body. In this last fight against Matarossian, you seemed completely healed and much more active, much more agile. Were you completely healed for this, and was that the difference?
В предыдущем бою с Мандио, у тебя было там повреждение в шее, было заметно, что тебе было тяжелее двигаться, и ты не настолько был подвижный. В этом бою вроде бы все исправилось, ты уже полностью восстановился к этому бою. И была большая, чувствовал большую как бы перемену, потому что не было никаких травм. Да, на самом деле, что они делают это к худшему, благодаря этой травме я подступился с человеком, который непосредственно массажист, который там теперь меня изучил, и к этому бою он приехал благовременно в моей команде, чтобы что-то видение. Приехал благовременно к этому бою, и поддерживал, что я уже знаю, вообще не изучаю дальше. Еще лучше в плане мышц, где какие там появляются там, возможные травмы, когда я покажу тебе, вот теперь это человек, шпатена, шпатена, я ему плачу деньги, теперь я готовлюсь к этому, я уже не переживаю, что такое может повториться.
Yes, definitely there was a big difference between my last, my, you know, the fight with Montiel and this fight. There was I did have an injury, and I always say that whatever happens, happens to the best. And when I had that injury, I actually met somebody in Russia who's a chiropractor and a, you know, top-level chiropractor that helped me actually get in the ring for that fight, because I had a pretty serious injury, but, you know, he did the best that he could to put me in the shape to get in the ring, and I did, because I was actually, you know, thinking of maybe not taking the fight. And now that chiropractor is part of my team, and he's been actually with me for the entire preparation for the fight, and I'm planning on keeping him in my team for you know, for all of my fights, because he's learning my body, he's learning exactly what needs to be done while I'm preparing in order for me to come out in a top-notch shape once the fight comes.
Nice.
So it did make a big difference.
In the terms of Sergio Martinez, what does Pirog see that are his weaknesses and strengths of Sergio Martinez? Can you tell us a little bit about what he sees of Sergio Martinez?
Можешь что-то сказать о том, что ты думаешь о Сергио Мартинес, какие-то его преимущества или какие-то его слабости?
Ну, бесспорно, хотел бы отметить, что Сергио Мартинес один из самых сегодняшнего мне интересных, сложных средневесов для меня. Но тем он и интересен для меня. Единственное его основной плюс, то, что он левша, и если он захочет, он может сделать так, что избегать боя. Потому что левшам легче это делать. Но в данном случае может, это его плюс, но в то же время является то, что ему хорошо даются бои именно с левшами, против чего, именно с левшами, которые выше его. С правшами, которые там выше его, ему уже не так легко дают эти бои. Тем более, если там правша не просто не боксирует, держа руки плотно защищены, а где-то может и сам эти руки и начинает там на рефлексах двигаться, сам перемещаться. Он сам начинает тоже чувствовать себя дискомфортно и уже начинает поднимать руки и немножко подпощаться.
First of all, I mean, one of his main strengths and one thing that I want to say is that he's definitely one of the top fighters in my division, and I feel that he's one of the fighters that can actually, you know, give me a great fight, and we can actually have a competitive fight. But one thing that's important that I want to mention is that he has a lot of success because he's a southpaw, and he's able to take advantage of other fighters that are not as used to southpaws fighting in his style. They can't even get much sparring or much experience fighting in that style with somebody else, and that gives him an advantage. But I don't feel he's going to have the same advantage while fighting a regular stand fighter that's not shorter than him that's actually taller than him. And that's why I think that he doesn't want to take the fight with me, because I think that once they start fighting and not just, you know, I won't just keep my hands up and I can just fight in the same style that he fights in. I can move around, I can drop my hands, and we can actually fight in the similar, you know, I can match his style, basically. I think that he'll have to raise his hands at certain points, and that does not make him comfortable, because that will make him more of an ordinary fighter. So I feel that, you know, we'll have a really competitive fight, because we'll have to pick, we'll have to mix styles, and we'll have to come to a style that will actually work for both of us. If we don't, then, you know, one of us is going to have a big, big win. So I think that's what's important.
What is his thoughts about the fact that Sergio Martinez has been focused in calling out Manny Pacquiao, Floyd Mayweather, who are smaller men, but his Pirog's name has not been in among those categories? What does he think about that? Should Sergio Martinez be focusing on Dmitry more rather than the guys that are in his lower weight divisions?
Что ты думаешь по поводу того, что Сержио Мартинес вызывает Пакьяо и Мейвезера, но ничего не говорит о тебе? Те намного меньше, и как бы не совсем понятно.
Но здесь, здесь ясно, что для чего это делает. Он хочет кассовых и денежных боев, что понятно даже в России, людям, которые начинают любовь с профессиональным. Но в то же время, например, по поводу меня, как я вижу ситуацию, на самом деле он просто, я опасный, достаточно опасный для него, как темная лошадка, непредсказуемо достаточно, и в то же время якобы его скоп. Невозможно заработать, да и понятно, невозможно заработать те деньги, которые он заработает, боксируя Мейвезера или, например, там, Мэнни Пакьяо. Просто я опасен, но неизвестен, так как они не заработают денег. Поэтому, видимо, он меня избегает.
I think it's obvious to many people that the reason that Martinez will be calling out Pacquiao or Mayweather, I think he's, you know, that probably a lot more of a money fight. And I think, I mean, even people in Russia are talking about that. And professional boxing is not as developed in Russia as it is here, and even people there are understanding the reason for that. But I really think that, you know, we should all, and at the same time, he thinks that I'm more of a risky opponent for him, while there's not as much financial interest involved in having a fight with me. But I think what's more important is that, you know, great fights bring great opportunities. And I don't, you know, we can all think that if it was possible for him to fight Pacquiao or Mayweather, it would probably happen already. And he might not be the best option for those fighters either, because he's a lot bigger and a lot heavier. So I think that, you know, if Martinez was taking the right fights right now, like a fight with me, depending on who would win, of course, I mean, it's a risk, but at the same time, it's a real fight. You know, I'm not just another opponent that he might be choosing or picking.
И еще добавить надо, если можно, что даже если в ближайшее время, то я убежден, если не Мартинес, не я, не проиграем, этот бой рано или поздно между нами состоит. Я в этом убежден 100%.
I'm 100% sure that sooner or later, even if it doesn't happen right now, sooner or later, if neither of us loses the fight, the fight is still gonna happen. I mean, he's a world champion, I'm a world champion, and, you know, we're both top fighters in the division, and I really think that a fight like this is something that has to happen, and it'll be a real fight, you know? It'll be a competitive fight, unlike other fights.
Dmitry, you're not concerned that Martinez doesn't have a belt anymore. He's just the lineal, he's the real middleweight champion, but he doesn't have a belt. To you, that doesn't matter? You just want to take the guy on because he's the best fighter in the division?
Так как у Мартинеса сейчас уже пояса нету в этой категории,
тебя это как-то напрягает, или тебе, в принципе, без разницы, ты просто хочешь с ним боксировать, так как он лучше в этой категории?
Меня не интересует, есть у него поезд или нет. Меня интересует сам. Только потому, что он лучше. И меня как бы никогда там, я не стремился к завоеванию поясов, я стремился к интересным зрелищным боям.
I personally never really set goals and just achieve, you know, in trying to win titles. I'm always trying to just, you know, get the best possible fights, and I think right now this is the best possible fight out there for me. There might be other fights that might come around, and you know, I'll take all the fights that are going to be there. I'm ready to fight anybody for the division, but I'm just sure that for the fans, you know, in America, in Russia, all over the world. If I fought Martinez, I'm sure that it would be a top level competitive fight that everybody would enjoy. It would not be one sided. It would be a real fight, and I think that's what everybody wants. And it's not a fight of Martinez against Pacquiao. You know, two fighters in completely different divisions, different levels. I think a fight like this is something that everybody deserves to see.
I can agree with that. I have one last thing. I know Dave has one last question. I thank you for being on with us. Let's say, you know, Martinez keeps, every time I mention Pirog, they say, well, he stole, or Lou DiBella says, you know, he stole our belt and blah, blah, blah. We're not going to fight him because of that. All that aside, what's plan B? Does he go after Gennady Golovkin? Do you go after Felix Sturm? Is he willing to, rather than just go back to Russia and defend the title, is he willing to go on the road and go after the other guys in the division?
Здравствуйте. Спрашиваю по поводу тебя. Дебелла говорит, что он, ну, наш поезд забрал и так далее. То есть, ну, типа, этот поезд и так наш был. Ну, независимо ни от чего, даже если этот бой не произойдет, ты готов драться с другими боксерами в этой категории? Головкин, Штурм. И готов ли ты путешествовать, а не оставаться только в России?
Да, бесспорно. По поводу, например, поезда, то, что там говорит, что там забрал и так далее. Опять же повторюсь, что поезд меня не интересует, и это лишний повод, это Сергей Мартинус доказать, что это его поезд, пусть заберет обратно. А по поводу того, что если бой не состоится с ним, бесспорно, он не последний, не первый, не последний в списке. Он как бы первый, но не последний в списке. Мне хотелось бы, конечно, объединительных боев, но хотелось бы, чтобы эти бои, если будут объединительными, хотелось бы их провести именно на крупных телеканалах американских. А так, по поводу там путешествовать, я, например, не против. Я не против приставать, путешествовать, и меня, например, там не смущает, если будет состоится в другом месте. Кроме России, я всегда проявлял желание драться в Америке. Я бы драл все последующие бои в Америке, если бы каналы проявляли интересы. Но так как интереса нет, мне приходится драться, например, там в России. Только лишь поэтому. А так я готов. Я готов в Америке провести объединительные бои. С любым из боксеров, то ли это Штурм, то ли это Головкин. То ли это Гил Австралии.
I just want to say that as far as what Lou DiBella says every time this Pirog is mentioned, I mean, if you think that I stole the belt, I think it would be the best thing for Martinez to do is to, you know, to fight me and prove that it's his belt. I mean, that's what any other fighter would probably want to do. But what's more important is that we're just the top fighters in the division. I mean, I can even give up my WBO belt and still fight Martinez. It's not about the belt. It's about us being, you know, being able to give the best fight in the division. And as far as fighting anybody else, I mean, as far as Sturm, I mean, I don't see the reason going to Germany and fighting over there. I mean, as I said before, I want to fight in the United States. If I can get a fight in the United States, whether it's, you know, unifying with other belts or just fighting
for the fans in the United States, that's what I want to do. That's all, you know, that's what I've, all I've been talking about whenever I'm asked about it.
Yeah.
In the United States, I want to make sure my fans can enjoy my style, and they know that they want to see me fight again. So, that's, you know, I'm ready to fight anybody, and it doesn't have to be in Russia. I'm ready to fight anywhere. So, the best thing to do is for me to fight in America, and I think that's what everybody wants.
I think what everybody does want.
Hopefully, it will happen.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I mean, his style is exciting. I like what I've seen from him. You know, when I saw Mahdavrosyan touch his body, he covered his body, but at the same time duck, so that if Mahdavrosyan had something to throw to the head, the punch flew over his head. If the guy decided to jab, he rolled the shoulder. There's a lot of significant things that Dmitry does. But my next question here is, and I hope you guys don't take an offense when I ask this question here, because this is something that a lot of fight fans are wondering and asking at the moment, is you face Jacobs, who didn't have enough experience, obviously, for him, for Dmitry. You face Mahdavrosyan, who was slow, but at the same time reserved with his punches. He did have some success, but let's be honest. It was not enough to really test Dmitry's boxing skills when they faced each other this past Saturday night. Martinez has got experience, he's got speed, and he's not gun-shy. He's not a guy that's going to reserve himself. He's a guy that's going to be intelligent, use a jab, and throw a very variety of punches at Pyrog. Is it smart for him, whether or not if the title was stolen, whether or not it's feasible for him to face Martinez at this moment? Is it smart for him to face Martinez right now here in America? Would it be smart for him to face somebody else to prepare him for a Martinez?
Он говорит, что твой бой, восстановил бой с Мартиросяном, ты там очень показал, ну, как бы высший пилотаж, защиты и так далее, там, в плане, там, когда он тебя бил в корпус, как ты подгибал локоть, как ты в то же время, как бы, нырял и так далее. Но что более важно, как бы, он говорит, ну, не в обиду, как бы так, если реально стоит на вещи, он говорит, как бы, Джейкобс хороший боксер, но у него, может, чуть-чуть не хватило опыта для тебя. Мартиросян тоже очень сильный боксер, но тоже, как бы, своего уровня. Как ты считаешь, независимо от того, украли они пояс или не украли, как ты считаешь, тебе нужен сейчас пояс с Мартинесом, который все-таки имеет и опыт, и можешь идти, как бы, ну, все-таки повыше уровня, чем эти два боксера? Или, может быть, тебе стоит какой-то еще промежуточный бой?
Бесспорно, я готов.
Okay.
Если там речь идет о том, что готов, не готов, не готов. Насчет того, что там может быть мне подождать и так далее. Да нет, я не считаю, что подождать стоит. Чтобы потом там не было таких разговоров, что там вот уже Мартинес, там возрастного боксера побил. Нет, я готов сейчас, учитывая, что у меня-то и опыта. Несмотря на меньше, значительно. И, может быть, мне лучше бы там провести больше боев, не кричать. Нет, я уже готов. И готов давно. Более того, я не боюсь рисковать. И я не стыжусь за пояс. А хочу драться и хочу рисковать. Хочу хороших боев, где там с большим риском.
Attached to the title, to the belt, that I should worry about it that much. You know, I've always taken risks. You know, I feel that maybe even I took a small risk with Jacob. Some people told me I might not be ready for him either, but it came out the other way around. And I feel that, you know, I don't want to fight Martinez. I don't want to beat Martinez and have people say that he was already too old for me. I want to fight Martinez right now while he's in his prime. And I feel it is a risk, but I feel that I also have a lot of experience, and I feel that I can have success in the fight against him. And if anybody thinks that I don't have enough experience, then maybe he should be taking the fight.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, brothers, thank you very much, Dmitry Pyrog, and our translator. Thank you, man, for coming on Leaving the Ring.
Thank you, buddy. Very much.
Very exciting stuff you guys said here on Leaving the Ring, and I appreciate it.
Thank you, guys. Thank you for your invitation. We're always happy to be on the show.
And, yeah, wish him luck, and hopefully we'll be seeing him on the network very soon. And thank you very much, guys. I appreciate it.
Okay. Have a good night. Call us anytime.
All right. Take care.
You have a good night, too.
Okay. Bye. Right. Bye.
Absolutely.
That's our champion.
God.
That's our
that
champion
was great.
Answer.
Yeah, that was fantastic. I mean, look, if you don't think I have enough experience, then that's even a better reason for Martinez to face me. You know what? A lot of fans are saying right now, they're thinking, you know, this guy doesn't have enough experience. He gets mopped up and murdered by Martinez. That's great. You know what I mean? If that's the thought process that you have, and like myself, and I've said this many, many times, I hate to hear, this is an easy fight. Or, you know, he shouldn't fight him because he'll beat him. I hate to hear fans have their fighters win fights on paper. This is why we have a ring. This is why we have gloves to put on our fighters, to put them in that middle, that in the middle of that circle, square ring, and let them dish it out to see and prove who was in the rights of saying, I'm going to be victorious. That's the whole purpose of this sport, you know, and I like the way he answered. Look, he was like basically saying to us, hey, okay, I'm not good enough to say I should fight him next, or I'm not good enough to say I can beat him. But put your money where your mouth is. Put me in the ring with him, and let's find out. Loved it. Great interview by Dmitry Pirog, man. If you came in late, don't worry about it. Catch it on the catch it on the replay. Go to leavingthering.com and go to our archives. It'll be right there for you. Really quick, our October issue is going to be coming out on the 6th. Please check it out. We got a lot of great stuff. 15 of the best fights has happened in HBO After Dark series. Tons of great writers that were able to participate and tell us their views and their pick of the fight. Came down to even Harold Lederman and Larry Merchant were able to get on that topic there, as well as other great stuff. Angulo talking about his curling fight that's going to be happening in Cancun, Mexico. He talks a little bit about curling. He talks about Vince Matarossian, who was supposed to be on the show today. And I've texted him, fellas. A lot of guys are asking me, did you text him? Did you call him? I did text and call him. And guess what? No return now. I talked to him earlier about being on the show, and then that's when I was hit. Now you need to talk to my manager. I don't know what to tell you guys. What can we do? About 5 more minutes, we're going to call in Lamont Peterson, who I just texted and told him that we're going to call him in so we can talk to us about his December matchup on the 10th with Amir Khan. And that should be a great, great fight. But, Gabriel, what do we should do, brother? Let's patch in the fight fan right now to talk a little bit more about boxing Saturday. Okay, let's go with man, got a lot of calls. People have been holding on, man. I'm really appreciative here on Leaving the Ring. Brian wants to talk about Saturday night fights. You're on live right now, brother, on Leaving the Ring.
Yeah.
What's on your mind?
Oh, nothing. Forgive me. I mean, I should know. What events were on this Saturday? I know it was somebody big today, or Saturday.
Sergio Martinez is going to be facing Darren Barker. On the undercard, you got Andy Lee and Brian Vera. It's on a rematch.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Yeah. Well, My thing is, because you guys just talked to Pyrog, and my thing is, man, do you think, like, two or three more wins for him, if he, you know, gets a win, you know, and then face Pyrog, I mean, at that point, do you think he'd clear out that middleweight division?
Well, you got Gennady Golovkin there, and a lot of people don't really know much about him because he hasn't fought in the U.S. yet. You haven't seen him on network, although if you catch legal streams or just streams in general, he just fought Kasim Uma down in Panama. And it was a hell of a fight. It was a nice win for him. Uma was in really good shape, although he's not really a middleweight, although he's probably grown into that now. But this guy is very, very talented. Celebrated amateur fighter, was a prospect a lot of people wanted. And I think he's now with Gary Shaw or Artie Palullo or both. And they're kind of co-promoting him. But he trains up with Sal Alvarez up in Big Bear. This kid's a beast. I think that's a guy in two or three fights, if you can get him on the U.S. and kind of get things going with him, that's a person that you're going to see on maybe an HBO or a Showtime. They should get him in the mix because he does have an interim WBA belt. there's a lot of guys, there's a lot of pieces in play right now that really could make for an exciting middleweight fight. I don't know if Martinez can just beat Pirog and say, all right, I've cleaned off the division. I mean, there's Felix Sturm, although he's kind of falling off and not going to leave Germany. And I wouldn't be upset if Martinez never faced him. But Golovkin would be a nice fight. Matthew Macklin would be a nice fight. Daniel Gill would be a slaughter, but a fun fight. And then you got Kid Chocolate, who's going to fight, you know, Craig McEwen to try to get in the mix. That's a young buck that you could fight, sort of like a Victor Ortiz. You know, you got to fight the young lion when you're the old lion. There's a lot of fights there for Martinez, I think, that are slowly on the horizon. It's going to be an incumbent on him to stay focused, stay in shape, and be able to maintain his position and fight all comers, sort of like a Bernard Hopkins did late in his middleweight lane. So
yep.
I think, you know, if HBO is smart, I mean, they've got that fighter locked down. Or if the promoters are smart, they'll go to the highest bidder and say, let's make these middleweight fights. They're all very exciting. I don't know where they sell, but, you know, we just saw last weekend, if you can create TV hype and internet hype, maybe that equals pay-per-view hype. It doesn't always necessarily equal ticket-selling hype. I mean, Floyd Mayweather hasn't. I know I'm sounding like a hater, but he's an anomaly. He sells like a million pay-per-views on average, but he doesn't sell seats.
He didn't do good at the gate. I was reading about this.
And so I think Martinez could be that kind of guy. He's exciting on TV. If you market him well, maybe you could build him into something like that, you know?
Yeah.
But he doesn't speak English either, and he doesn't talk shit. So it's kind of hard because Floyd's great at that, you know?
Yeah.
So,
well,
I don't know.
Yeah.
Does that answer your question?
What'd you say?
Does that answer your question?
Yeah, it does. Another question. Andre Ward and Carl Froch, who do you guys think would win? And in another question, if whoever wins that, who do they fight? Lucien Boutte? I mean, does that seem like the most viable option for the
He's the money man.
He's
the smart guy in the division. He was like, I'm not going to fight all these guys. I'll wait for them to come to me, and I'll get a nice contract with Showtime because I know they want to lock me up with the winner of their tournament. He played his cards beautifully. I think there's no question that whoever wins that fight, I'm picking Andre Ward by decision, but whoever wins that fight, certainly Lucien Boutte is their next step. I mean, why wouldn't he be? Who else are you going to fight? You know, you're not going to jump to 175. There's really no cash cow there. Bernard Hopkins, you know, he's kind of a problem, you know, that he's got to deal with, and Chad Dawson in a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
We don't even know what that landscape looks like. So, do you think
the winner, winner of that fight, do you think they have a chance against Luke Boutte? And if whoever wins that fight, you know, the tournament winner plus the winner of the Boutte fight, Do you guys think they would move up at all? I mean, because light heavyweight division, I mean, outside of a couple guys, it's not really that well known.
I know Ward says that he wants to move up, you know?
Yeah.
Ward has really stressed out that he's really looking at, in a couple of years, he'd like to go to heavyweight. I mean, how much in truth of that? You know, I don't know yet. I mean, I don't know whether or not his body's going to be able to hold up a few more pounds, and he's really short to be a middleweight at 6'2". It's that short to be a heavyweight. But he's really stressed that that's one of his dreams of doing. You know, so I see him a little after the 168 tournament that there is a possibility if he gets a shot at Lucien Boutte, if he's successful against Carl Froch, you could see that fight, and then from there, I could see the possibility of him jumping up.
Okay.
But I'd say that two years from now. I don't see it anytime soon at all. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think they still have a lot of stuff they want to do with themselves.
Yeah, I mean, the light heavyweights are kind of, like, I think the middleweights are kind of coming out of the dark into the light. You know, guys are kind of maturing. You're seeing a couple key 154-pounders in Kirkland and Angulo that probably, if they don't make that play for the Canelo belt.
Oh, man, they got to make that.
Yeah, then they're going to come up, right? So you got those guys, but you've also got Golovkin, who's building some steam. They're trying to get him in the U.S. You've got HBO that's looking to make more action fights as opposed to more, you know, special favor fights.
under the Ross Greenberg regime, and that, now that he's gone, things are starting to change a little bit. But to me, the light heavies are kind of what the middleweights were like last year and the year before that. There's a lot of guys that are high risk and low reward, and there's no real clear guy. I mean, you got Bernard Hopkins, who's obviously the top man in that division. I don't know how well he's felt. He still needs to fight John Pascal in order to make good money, and this Chad Dawson fight, who knows how well it's going to sell in Los Angeles. You got a guy from Philly and a guy from Connecticut fighting in Staples Center, and neither guy is known as a stylistic joy. So to watch.
Well, Chad Dawson's he's marketable. I mean, the dude. I know he's sometimes he fights defensive, but some fights. I mean, and shows that he has above average power. He can do some damage on people. I mean,
that fight was awesome.
Yeah, the only problem is his personality, man. It's very, very hard to market. He's really dry and stuff. Brian, I got to put you on hold, brother. We got so many calls, and then we got Lamont Peterson that we got to call in immediately after.
No problem.
Put you on hold, brother. Don't hang up, okay? Thanks for calling in.
Yeah, no problem.
Let's get in really quick, man, like 5 minutes, 10 minutes tops and stuff. Let's get in Ryan from the UK, who wants to talk about Darren Barker and Sergio Martinez. I think a lot of folks from the United States are sleeping on Darren Barker. I haven't had a chance to really break it down and what I think could happen and should happen on Saturday night. And like I said, I watched a lot of tape on Darren Barker, and a lot of folks were kind of jumping on me saying, for what? It's an easy fight. I hate to argue with American fans. I don't think it's an easy fight. Ryan, I don't know if he agrees with me or not. Ryan, you're on live right now and leaving the ring. Go ahead, brother, and speak your mind.
All right, mate. Barker isn't an easy opponent, for sure. He's not too bad. He's pretty talented. He moves a lot. He throws in combinations. He's got a pretty decent jab. He's got more power in his fist than his record would suggest, with only something like 60% KO ratio. So I don't think Martinez is going to walk right through him, although that's what most forums would be saying. I actually think he's going to last the whole 12 rounds. But, I can understand why people might think he will be out of there before.
Thing about the Barker here is that there's a few things here that I like about him, okay? And I don't know whether or not he's going to lose all the rounds. I actually give him 4 rounds, in that fight. I think he's going to be able to take control of, but then let it slip away later down the things. But the one thing that he brings is he's got a good jab, okay? He knows how to use that jab. He sticks it out there, and he throws the jab to throw it, and that's what really gassed him out in his last fight, with Spot, I believe, who he fought last. He gassed out because he was really throwing a lot of punches that were unnecessary. The other thing was that it became really ugly, but it fit him. It was able to fit him. You know what I mean? Getting in the inside, tying up with Spada and holding him, and really just making it an ugly fight, making Spada look uncomfortable, making Spada do things that he didn't really want to do. And that's what Barker has the capabilities of doing. The thing I don't like what Barker does is that when he tries to avoid punches, not only does he shell up and allow you to throw off whatever you're going to throw, and then he'll kind of set himself to try to throw something back, but if you're throwing some hard punches, he crouches down, he bends at the waist, and he ends up looking at the canvas. He doesn't bend his knees. He doesn't try to, slip punches the way a traditional fighter would want to do, to always keep the eye on the ball. And when you end up leaving your eyes at the canvas, what happens is you're not able to see what's going to be returned to your head or to your face. That, to me, spells for maybe a possible flash knockdown or getting really, really hurt from Sergio Martinez, because one is Martinez is a lefty, two is Martinez has got power, three he's got speed. Barker, to me, has got to correct those little fine tunes. But if we go take it back to when Martinez was beaten and he was fatigued out with certain fighters from Kermit Cintrone all the way back to Antonio Margarito, who was able to stop him, he was stopped and he got fatigued on particular fights because they were physical. Barker is a big enough kid to be physical with Martinez, to really test to see whether or not he's corrected that stamina problem he's had in the past. That's why I like this fight, and that's why I say a lot of fans, really honestly, I think this is a little bit more telling fight from Barker than a lot of us are giving him. You know, the odds are really against Barker, but I think that we should probably give him a little bit more, yes, 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 he could have some significant rounds rather than saying this is going to be an easy fight. I don't think it's an easy fight, Gabriel.
I think for some of the reasons you mentioned, you know, the fact that he's a taller, rangier guy, he's got sneaky power. The Barker is, you know, he's a 13-1 dog. People have been saying he's 26-1, that they're reading the odds wrong. Martinez is, you got to bet $26 to make a dollar. But with Barker, if you bet a buck, you could win 13. That's how you gauge the underdog. But I think he could be, he's an unknown quantity. He's never really beaten anybody at this level. He's never really beaten anybody of true note, you know. I look at him a lot like a guy that fought in the Midwest a lot, or a guy that fought, more accurately, somebody that's only fought in Mexico a lot. Yeah, he's probably fighting tough guys and guys that are good fighters or whatever. But if you haven't really fought out of your neighborhood before and you're heading to this kind of stage, that's a whole different animal. That adds a whole other element to the thing. And there's probably a reason why you're 29 years old, you're 23-0 with 14 knockouts, and no one's ever really heard of you on the world stage. They've only heard of you in the UK. I think it might be a tougher fight just because, like you said, he's tall, he's rangy, he does use his jab, but he's wide with his shots, and he's not particularly fast. And I don't see him really adjust throughout fights. He kind of fights his way. It's a little bit awkward, and you kind of have to adjust to him. But I think Martinez has shown that he is able to do those things, and he's much faster. He's in his prime. He's coming on strong right now, and I think he's going to take Barker out. I think it'll be a little tougher. I think it'll go a little longer. But I think that's also just certain things I'm looking at. You know, Martinez took a little break in training camp, which is actually normal for them. They usually do it around week 3 or 4. But they went to Vegas to take that break. I thought that was kind of odd. You know, I heard you just kind of sat by the pool and hung out, but Vegas? It just seemed strange. That's the last place I would go to rest. And then the other thing, I mean, I know people, just one guy said, you know, the porn star thing was blown out of proportion. She showed up, she took a picture, she left. But it's weird little things like that I kind of go, I wonder, you know, is the crown weighing a little heavy? Is he becoming a little bit of a decadent champion rather than a guy that was hungry and focused and doing his thing? I know he just bought a new car, which, you know, those things are fine. But sometimes you kind of look at that and you got to wonder, you know, is he going to have a little bit of a mental letdown? He's fighting a guy that, if you look at the poster, the guy has no chance. It's like big photo of Sergio Martinez, and Darren Barker might as well be like peeking around the corner onto the banner that's the fight poster. And the night is called, you know, Noche de Maravilla. Maravilla. You know, it isn't Barker versus Martinez. So all those little things, I kind of wonder, those are little mental things that might play into the game. That did he kind of come down? You know, he's doing a little reality show at his gym. He's got that kind of press hanging around all the time. Those are the little things that I make me wonder, how much longer are we going to have this middleweight champion? You know, is he going to suffer a letdown? Is it possible? It's possible for everybody. That's kind of what I'm more curious about.
The thing is
Barker's no mystery, you know?
Well, you know, the thing with Barker, though, is that if you do tie him up, he will rabbit punch. You know, you tie him up, he's going to hit if you hold one arm. He's not going to let his other arm just dangle there. You know what I mean? He's going to make it a physical fight. The other thing is that I don't agree about him being slow. I think he has exceptional speed. Does he have Martinez speed? No, but I think he's got a great right hand that when he throws it. You know what I mean? His right hand it can really be on point when he sets himself to do it. I'd say it's a much tougher fight with Martinez. I say that he's going to be in the fight. How long, how much, and how long is he going to be in it? I don't know. It goes back and boils down to the exact same things you are mentioning right now. Having a little, you know, reality series. I don't even know why they call it a reality series. It's not. And going to Vegas and doing that. There's a lot of things that sometimes a fighter, when they start getting fights that he's not even picked, let's not even say that. He hasn't picked them out. He's been fighting the guys that he's supposed to. But when you start getting fights and you start getting a little bit more exposure than use, that really honestly can either turn out a fighter or turn on a fighter. and continue to be a champion because he's looking for the bigger money. I say it's a great fight. I think it's going to be a great fight between these two Saturday night. But like I said, the word easy to me is just, I hate that word easy. I think Barker's not going to be an easy, easy fight. He's going to be in the fight. How many rounds? I don't know. But we'll find out. That's why they got in the ring. They're going to get in the ring Saturday night. Ryan, hey, brother, thank you for calling in from the UK. I got to put you on hold because we got to get Lamont Peterson on the line.
Okay, man.
Thank you, brother. Don't hang up. So let's call in Lamont and see what he's got going on. December 10th, I believe, is the date that they have scheduled for himself and Amir Khan. I think he's going to the UK next week for the press conference to talk about his showdown with Amir Khan. He's fallen short with Victor Ortiz and Brandon Rios, and now he gets another big money fight for himself to show greatness if he's able to pull it off. Lamont, are you there, brother?
Yeah, I'm here.
How you doing, man? How's everything going?
I'm good. Everything's good. Now it's just chilling out.
Hey, thanks again, brother, for letting us speak to you here on Leaving the Ring. You've been on the show numerous times. It's me, Dave Duenas, with my co-host Gabriel Montoya. So December 10th, Amir Khan, you're going out there to promote this fight. Hey, what are your thoughts and how do you feel about the fact that you're going to be able to get in with what a lot of us are considering one of the best 140-pounders right now in that division?
It feels good to be at the top level of the game. I truly believe that I belong here, so it's all about me going out and performing the way I know I can.
You know, when we talk about success, you've been falling a little short, okay? You had Victor Ortiz, you had him backpedaling after he had dropped you, but it seemed like you were able to adjust to some of the things that he was doing. He became kind of confused. Before that, Brandon Rios, it looked like you fought the wrong fight. Before that, Timothy Bradley, it looked like you fought the wrong fight. Now you're getting Amir Khan. Now, do you think that Amir Khan and his camp are looking at you as a guy that doesn't seem to know when to get the right fight and the right plan to get in the ring?
I really don't know what they're thinking about. I just, you know, to me, I'm just thankful for, you know, to get another shot at a title. And so I'm just trying to, you know, fix my problems that I have that I feel as though that I need to work on. And then coming in with a good game plan and going in and winning the fight.
Gabriel?
You had that tough fight with how you doing, Lamont? Welcome to the show. It's Gabe Montoya with Max Box.
Man, how you doing?
I'm doing good, man. I don't think we've ever spoken, so it's nice to get a chance to. Looking back at that Victor Ortiz fight, you struggled early, and then you came back later, and you got a draw, and it was a very tough, close fight. What did you find out about yourself in a tough fight like that? I mean, you came right back around, and then your next fight, you know, was the next year, but you knock out Victor Caio, who people were kind of big on, and you've gone the distance with Tim Bradley. Have you had a breakthrough mentally as a boxer? Have you found something out about yourself in those fights that makes you feel confident heading into this fight?
Not so much of in the ring, because, you know, in the amateurs I have been dropped, come back and win fights and things of that
sure.
nature. You know, I've always been on the top level, you know, as far as fighting. They're just preparing for, you know, big fights like this, just, you know, the training and, you know, the mental preparation for, you know, just doing this whole training camp. I feel much more comfortable with making weight and getting my body in shape without undertraining or overtraining, just finding that good balance where I feel good in the ring and where I can get my best performance. So that's the main thing that I've learned, through those fights.
And you're going to be facing a whole different kind of thing. I mean, I guess you maybe would compare him a little more to Victor Ortiz than to Tim Bradley in terms of facing a top 140-pounder. When you look at Khan, I'm not completely sold. I don't know if the power is very real. I think his speed is probably his greatest gift, and his size. He seems like a welterweight waiting to happen in a 140-pound body. When you look at Amir Khan, what do you see?
To me, I see him more of a Timothy Bradley type of fighter. They both throw a lot of punches. You know, they don't worry about really swinging hard. They just worry about putting a lot of fast punches out. But, you know, with Victor, he kind of sit down more on his shots. He's, you know, the taller fighter. And, you know, more so like Kyle's height. And for some reason, I seem to deal with the taller fighters better than the shorter fighters. Don't ask me why. I don't know. It's just that way.
You know,
Khan, I won't say that he can't punch. He cannot punch. But it's probably not as, you know, as big as asset. You know, it's his speed and his work rate. To me, it's the best things that he do. And he kind of keep you on defense a lot by throwing a lot of punches. Because I don't think his defense is that good.
You know, I got to make a correction. I had said that you had Brandon Rios. That was your brother Anthony, you know.
Yeah.
I just got confused there for a moment. Hey, Lamont, when you got a guy that's in front of you, he's got some very fast hands. You know, Khan does bring the speed factor into the ring against anybody that he ends up facing here. And power, like you said, you know, it's like my co-host said, it's questionable. Maybe are we sold on it or not. The only people that can really be sold on it are the guys that step into the ring with him. But how do you take away a guy that does use hand speed, but at the same time, Amir will use his hand speed, but he circles his guys when he does dart in to throw his significant punches. How do you take that away from him?
Time will always be speed. And when he fought Prescott, you know, when Prescott caught him, it was all time. You know, Khan was throwing a lot of fast punches at the time, and it just seemed like to me, you know, Prescott kind of stepped to the side a little bit and threw like a right hand left hook, and they landed right in between his punches. So timing always be speed. Timing is the best thing to use against it. And, of course, using your jab to throw the timing off, throw his timing off. And that's probably the biggest thing I can think of is just timing.
When do you go back? I mean, because you changed your style kind of mid in your career, you know. I mean, you gave us a great fight with Timothy Bradley. You gave us a good fight with Victor Ortiz. But it looked like you changed your style on a lot of us, you know. Even from when we had spoken to your trainer, Barry Hunter, you know, he felt that you changed it up a little bit. You started to sit down more on your punches. Is this a perfect time to go back to what you originally had broke out in the scene, which is be a defense whiz?
I'll probably come out that way just to see, you know, how things go. With me, you know, I kind of try to adjust in the ring. If I feel as though, you know, I can kind of bang with you and that's working better for me, then that's what I'll do. If I feel as though boxing is working, then I'll just keep boxing.
You think, I mean, you know, Khan has faced Marcos Maidana, who's kind of a limited puncher. The more he fights,
yeah,
the more limited he seems. Zab Judah, who, you know, I give him a good shot to win that fight, but he looked like a really nice Chevy with a bad engine in it. He hasn't really faced, like, that top-level guy, whereas you look at your record, and, okay, you got a draw with Victor Ortiz, and you lost to Bradley, but I was there for that fight. It was a really competitive fight.
All the way down to it.
I don't think the scores really reflected that fight. And you took out Victor Kayo in two. Do you think that you're more experienced on some level than Amir Khan and more prepared for the different things he's going to do than the other way around?
Yeah. I think that the main thing that would make, you know, the difference in the fight is, you know, with the Zab Shooters and the Madonnas and the you know, the guys that he's been fighting lately, most of them have been the shorter fighters with shorter arms, and he's been able to use his reach and his, you know, and his speed. His reach, his height, and his speed. I think in the fight with me that he won't have those advantages as much as he did against the other fighters. So he'll have to come up with a new game plan. I don't think he can use the advantages that he had over the other fighters. He won't be able to have it over me. So we'll see something new from Khan, and you'll probably see something new from me. And that's, you know, a lot of times you determine, that's how you determine, you know, good fighters, great fighters, and okay fighters, you know, when they can come and show you something totally new in their game. Instead of always just using the same style to win.
Right. Something, Floyd, yeah, every time out, there's a little, like, even Floyd does that. There's always a little new wrinkle that you're kind of,
yeah,
like, oh, I didn't see that before.
Yeah,
and
Floyd is sitting down and sitting in the pocket much more these days.
Right.
And you have to give him credit for it.
Yeah, he is. His fights, I haven't been bored in it, you know, other than after a while, the Mosley fight was kind of like a repetitive beating.
Yeah,
I haven't been bored in a
fight. That's only because Shane didn't want to fight no more, really.
Right.
Yeah. 6-2 to tango. With Khan, too, you're something different about you, too, is that he had to take this fight if he wanted to keep the belts. You're a mandatory. You're not like these other guys where it's kind of, they kind of picked the opponent and went, all right, this is, you know, the top guy, like Maidana. Let's make that fight. This style kind of, you know, works for me. They had to take this fight.
Yeah.
That makes you a little more dangerous, too, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, I think
so. They could have vacated or whatever, but still, I mean, I look at it, you know, I actually kind of respect Khan for taking the fight.
But,
you know, he could have just said, I'm moving up to welterweight.
Yeah, and I give him credit because he do, you know, anybody that, you know, they have ever, you know, put in front of him, you know, he always accepts the fight. And a lot of times these days, you don't get that.
Is there a location? Have they announced a location for this fight, Lamont?
It's going to be in Washington, D.C., my hometown.
Really?
We're just having a problem with finding a venue right now because a lot of the stuff, venues are already booked as far as, you know, the basketball season and, you know, a lot of things like that. So,
are you a little surprised by that?
Yes, I am, but, hey, I'm happy.
I mean, let me ask you this. You're surprised, but at the same time, is that a little comforting to know that if they were to choose to fight at another state or another, casino like in Vegas, that you're possibly not going to be fighting not just Amir Khan, but the judges and the referee. Are you comfortable with that now?
I really don't think the judges will be any different if we fought here or if we stay, you know, if we fought anywhere else. A lot of times.
Really? You don't think so? I mean, Madonna was having a type of time with Joe.
If we fight in Vegas, I fought in Vegas probably like my last 6-7 fights. You know, they pretty much know me well, and, you know, all of us have good relationships, so I'm cool with that. I just think that if there was something fishy going on, you know, with Khan and them or Golden Boy or anything like that, it'll happen anywhere, no matter where we go, even if it's here. So, but I don't think that they are. So, it don't matter to me where we fight. I think it'll be a fair fight. Only thing that I will gain from fighting at home is, you know, the crowd will be going for me. Any little thing I do, they'll be cheering for me, which can influence the judges to, you know, score rounds for me. That's it.
I just have a very good feeling that being that it's going to be in your hometown, being that there's going to be a lot of your fans and hometown fans coming out there, that it just makes it more of a fair matchup for you guys to step into the ring, rather than it being in Vegas, which is the home of Golden Boy. You know what I mean?
Is that DC in the background there?
You say what?
Is that DC in the background right there?
That's DC in the background.
I thought it might have been them already hauling away Amir Khan for you, man.
I find it interesting though that they would decide to do it in Washington
Well, came down to meet he had met someone here not too long ago, like a month or so ago, and I think Hillary Clinton or someone down here, and he said he had a good time down here. He really enjoyed himself, and he wouldn't mind fighting here. And then Richard Schaefer said, you know, why not fight here? So I guess that's how it went.
I mean, I don't think he really has found his spot where he draws in the U.S., you know?
Yeah.
I think New York did okay, you know?
Yeah, and I fought on that the car when he fought Madonna, of course, when I fought Victor. So, you know, the numbers wasn't that great. So I know if we fight here, we'll do good numbers.
Yeah, I imagine.
Well, I'm looking forward to it, man. I mean, you look at this. One thing I'm curious. You know, everybody kind of knocks Khan and says, well, he's been knocked out. He's got a terrible chin, and he's been hurt before and dropped by other guys. Obviously you want to hit him on the chin and find out, but do you just come in and kind of go, I'm going to just swing the bat and make contact, and that's all I'm really worried about is just boxing and working towards that? Or are you looking out to really just plant one on him and find out right off the bat?
No,
to give away your game
me,
plan.
You know, I like to go to the body a lot. So of course I'll be trying to break him down there because he do move a lot, and I would like to take his legs away. But of course I'll be taking shots at his chin, not based on because I don't think he can take a good punch or anything. It's just the fact of I just want to start doing that more. I don't think I take enough of him, and that's one thing about boxing that's different from others. Sports that you do have that game changes punch. You can be down, every round, but you can just land that one punch. So, I will be taking shots at them like that, several in the round.
Nice. Well, man, I gotta wish you all the best of luck. You know, I've always been a fan, brother, of you and your brother.
Thanks.
And I'm hoping that. At least one of these big fights, these big payday fights for you, sways your way, man. It's deserving, not long.
Yeah, thanks, man.
Being a good fighter and a good guy and seeing your life story. And Barry Hunter, man, who I think is one of the top-notch trainers out there in the game. We've had him on with yourself and without you. And he's one of those guys, man, that can just school you in the sweet science. And
most definitely.
Got to wish you guys... all of you guys, the best of luck, man, and appreciate you coming on, leaving the ring, and speaking to us about your December 10th match in Washington, your hometown, and against Amir Khan. Hey, wish you the luck, brother.
Thanks a lot, man. Anytime, you want me on the show, just give me a call. I'm here.
Absolutely. Hey, just to make sure, though, is that your real Twitter right there? Is that you really tweeting?
Yeah.
With Vance?
Yeah, that's me.
Okay, so KingPete26. So if anybody wants to follow Lamont Peterson, chop it up with my man here who's given his time to speak to us here on Leaving the Ring. Be sure to follow him on Twitter, KingPete26. Hey, we're Leaving in the Ring. It's all capital LIITR boxing, brother. So hopefully you can follow us back because we're following you right now.
Okay, I'm going to definitely do that.
All right, man. Take care, bro.
Thanks for coming on.
I'll see you guys later. Okay.
Take care. Lamont Peterson, man, God, it's just so hard not to root against him. You know what I mean? I mean, root for him. You got to root for the guy, He comes to fight. That's the thing about, is that, when he came into the boxing scene, he had this real defense mode, and he would reserve himself, slip a lot of punches, and then counter. But somewhere, somehow, when he got in with Timothy Bradley, he brought a fight. You remember that? He was able to bring a fight at Agua Caliente in California. He was able to bring something, and we saw a different Lamont Peterson. Now, was it for the better of Lamont's, for the Lamont, entourage? No. But it was for the better for us boxing fans because we have been entertained by Lamont when he has stepped into that ring, especially when he got in with Timothy Bradley. He ended up having a great, great slugfest between both of those guys at 140.
Yeah, I thought that was a hell of a fight. I thought Bradley won, but I thought it was a much closer fight. The scores were so, 120, 108, and I thought it was a tough fight. And both guys showed the ability to adjust, which is, I think key to victory always. But Lamont, I thought, learned from it, and he took that into the Victor Ortiz fight, and I thought he did very, very well. And some people thought he won, some people thought Victor won. It was one of those, that's why it was a draw. But I thought he kind of figured some things out, and even in, his last fight, it was like he likes to come inside a little bit too much, but when he decides to be on the outside and box a little bit more and bring that hard right hand, it's not like the great equalizer, but he knows how to place it, and it can be that kind of game changer. It obviously was for Victor Cayo. There's no reason why he can't beat Amir Khan, in my opinion. He's got all the tools, We're going to basically find out as he, and I don't mean this as to be rude, but
is he like the Obakar of his generation? Where,
right.
You know, he's that guy that is always really competitive and you really like watching him fight, but when it comes time to face the top names in the division, he just doesn't pan out, you know. We'll see. I mean, he's been competitive. I mean, you know,
very
he was able to last the distance, you know, and almost beat Victor Ortiz, who just, well, he didn't really do that great against Floyd Mayweather, but still, it was a good draw. So, you know, we'll see.
You know,
I can't wait. I think it's a fun fight.
It is a fun fight. We had talked about this when there were in talks of Amir Khan, if you know, because he wasn't getting any success of facing Guerrero Madonna or Bradley at the time, especially Timothy Bradley, is who does he move on to next? Lamont Peterson was the notable choice of taking on Ford for his career because, you know, it boils down to fighting the best. Lamont Peterson is obviously one of the best, you know, one of the best fighters out there. And it's not a diss when you say he's the Obakar. He may be the Obakar because it his career has not ended. You know what I mean? It's just the possibility he could be the Obakar of our generation. It's up to him and whether or not he's going to change that thought process that we're having here on Leaving the Ring. But and like you said, he has all the tools. He has all the finesse and he has the troublesome style to give Khan. But he's got to land those significant punches. He's got to make it his fight. And by making it his fight, he's got to go back to what he originally came into the boxing scene, which is be a defense guy. Make Amir commit to certain things that he's going to make mistakes on. Don't follow Amir Khan. Don't try to bang with Amir Khan. Know that this guy's got speed and he's got power. That's what Lamont's got to settle on. He's got to settle on the combinations, got to settle on going into the body and coming back to the head. It's the shoe shine, you know? Have enough to really slow down Amir Khan, have enough to make him be dazzled, you know, with his eyes rather than with the punches. Get him confused, get him frustrated, make Amir do the mistakes, those amateur mistakes that we were really used to seeing. That's what Lamont Peterson's got to do. That's a tall order, but you know what? Being in Washington, D.C., I say it really kind of comforts the mind frame of knowing that he's going to have a lot of support rather than going to Vegas, which he's not going to have that equal support. I can care less that he's fought there. You're not having that equal support because that's the hometown. Consider the second home for the promoter of Amir Khan.
Yeah, I think it's going to be, you know, it's going to be one of those fights where it's going to come down to the wire. I mean, it's a Peterson fight, and that's usually how his fights go. I mean, is he going to be that guy that finally finds that little bit extra to win it, or is he going to be that guy that always just does just enough to lose? You know, that's, and I hate to, you know, lay out a guy's legacy like that, but that's kind of where he's at right now. You know, he came close to taking out Victor Ortiz later in the fight when Ortiz kind of shelled up, wasn't able to do it, wasn't able to use his natural gifts of being able to box and take care of, you know, Tim Bradley. Let's see what he does. You know, and then Victor Kyle was a guy that people thought would come back and be something of a contender, and he took him out in two. So let's see what happens with this fight. You know, he fought his way into this position, and I'm curious to see him fight his way all the way through it because, I mean, you got to think about, too, Khan wants to leave the 140-pound division. He's a growing boy. He's getting bigger all the time. And I wonder, you know, is he going to be a little drained in this fight? This is, they say, is his last 147-pound fight. So I'm curious, you know, is he going to be drained by that? Is Lamont going to be able to take care of it? Take care of business in the second half of the fight. I still contend Khan looked like crap against Paul McCloskey. And
yeah,
it was a style thing. It wasn't necessarily, you know, that Khan just had an off night. Well, you know, Alex Ariza wasn't there. That might have been something to do with it. But McCloskey made him look bad. And I think, you know, Peterson's got a style that isn't exactly, you know, the most friendly to another boxer. And he's going to be rough with him. He's going to get inside. He's going to work that body. Hopefully he's going to slip that jab if he can. He's going to make a fight of it, and I think this is much more a competitive fight. He's 27 to Amir Khan's, I think, 24. He's a real man at this point, taking on a guy that's still pretty young. If it turns into a dogfight, we'll see what happens. I like Peterson in that kind of fight.
Yeah, and then the confidence there is for Peterson. I mean, he could literally sit there and go, I fought Timothy Bradley. And it was a, you know, a back-and-forth war here, you know. I did lose to him. But you know what? I was in the fight. I fought Victor Ortiz, who fought Berto, knocked him out, and wasn't able to do the same thing to me. You know, so when it comes to the factor of confidence build, Peterson has it. You know what I mean? He's actually going in believing I could take the best shots from the best, and I'm going to be able to take the best from Khan. It just boils down to game plan. What game plan is going to fit the bill to beat Amir Khan? That's what the whole tale in that fight. I think this is a great matchup for Amir Khan. You got to give him kudos, even though it is a mandatory fight, because like you said, he could have vacated that title, but instead he chose to go to hostile territory, which is Lamont Peterson's side of the state, and face him in an arena where technically you're going to have Lamont Peterson fans probably outweighing and outroaring the Amir Khan fans when it comes to being in the United States at this moment. Hey, you know what? There's a great fight that's happening as well before Saturday night fights between Martinez and Barker. Espinoza fighters, man. They're going to be fighting on Solo Book Sale. This is a, you know, DVR this if you can't catch up with it. I really like the fights between, you know, David Wadella and Luis Ramos Jr. I think it's a big step up for Luis Ramos Jr., but he's fighting the guy that's really been kind of the gatekeeper right now for the Golden Boy stable mates. You know, David Della is part of the Golden Boy stables, but he's been the guy to rather or not to see whether if you're going to continue in moving up the ladder. David Della is not the fastest guy in the world, but he's got some pretty good, decent, heavy hands. Doesn't got a whole lot of knockouts, but he's got heavy hands to back you up and outwork you. You know, Ramos is a kid by Espinoza who's got 19 wins but 8 KOs. You know, good work rate, hasn't lost, so confidence is definitely there. Rodello, if he gets a win, he puts himself back into the contingencies of the who's and who's at the 135 pounds. Now, the Kova event that's going to be televised is another Espinoza fighter, Ronnie Rios, he's an undefeated guy, 15 wins, 7 KOs. And he's fighting a guy that's kind of past his prime and should have been knocked out back in San Francisco at the Fisherman Awards with Eloy Perez. And that's Speedy Roger Gonzalez, who's got 27 wins, 18 KOs, but 4 losses. This was a guy that has been inactive when he got in with Eloy Perez. It was almost close to a year and a half to 2 years. So Eloy should have took him out, but didn't. Well, it boils down now to whether or not did it give it enough time for him to get adjusted back into the ring and shake off the ring rust? Well, Ronnie Rios is definitely going to find out whether or not he does belong back in the ring or does he belong in retirement. Gabriel, any thoughts about these two fights are happening on Friday night on Solo Book Sale, brother?
I think it's and I like David Rodella. He's a quality guy. He seemed in shape when I saw him heading over to the Victor Ortiz fight a couple weeks back. But I just think Luis Ramos is a little bit step above. I'm not sure about Louis' power, but I know he's certainly a very good boxer. I think this one probably goes down to the wire, or down to the decision, or maybe a late stoppage for Ramos. I just think he's too much. Ronnie Rios also on the card. I expect him to win as well. I just think he's just a quality fighter. You know, I think he's probably maybe even more maybe a better boxer than the other Ramos. But, you know, Roger Speedy Gonzalez is definitely Roger Gonzalez. I don't know about Speedy anymore. You know, 33 years old. He's lost his last 3 fights. He's been stopped in 2 of them.
Exactly.
He's able to go the distance with Perez. But Perez, despite that last fight, is not known as a puncher. And I think, you know, the last little bits of him, you know, I hate to say it, but it's kind of were beaten out of him by Cornelius Locke and Gamboa. So I fully expect Rios to pull this one out.
I do too. I think this is just a night for the Espinoza fighters, but with good guys in front of them. I'm not saying good guys. No, let me take that back. David Wadella to me is a good fight. Johnny Speedy Gonzalez is not a good fight. You know, I keep going back with Eloy Perez. You saw a guy that couldn't even make the weight. Couldn't make that weight. And at the time, too, he's been inactive. You know, we talked a little bit about that. But it's there for a showcase for the Espinoza fighters. It's there for them to look explosive and take advantage of the moment. And that's definitely what he's got to do. He cannot let this slip when we talk about having Speedy Gonzalez in front of him, because he hasn't looked too speedy, and he definitely looks like he's more of Speedy Gonzalez's cousin, Slowpo Rodriguez, more than anything else. Got to get him out of there.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, he should. He should get him out of there. That's what he's there for, you know, is for you to get him out of there. So get him out of there. You know,
get him out of
should
there.
Should be a good night to fight. So yeah, I'm probably not going to swing by for this one. I was thinking about it, but I think I'm going to be
hanging out in the office doing some late night writing on Friday. So I'm probably going to miss this one, although it's a hell of a venue. If you guys get a chance to check it out at the Orange County Fairgrounds in Costa Mesa, it's really fun. It's the OC Hangar is what they call it. They've got some great Tecate girls walking around just serving drinks, some nice ring card girls. I can highly recommend that. And they've also got a really giant like video screen against the wall. This is really the best thing. I mean, the whole venue is really cool looking. It's inside
right.
of an old hangar. You got the ring in the center, and then against the wall, it's like a giant video screen, so you can see all the action, see all the replays. Pretty much every seat there is a really good seat. I can't rave about it enough. It's something to be checked out. It's becoming probably my second favorite Southern California venue at this point, next to Home Depot Center.
And make sure you look for the Art Fight Junkie out there. Is going to be covering the event. You can pat him on the back. He was throwing out the Ortiz and Mayweather press conference there. he's somewhat of a celebrity right now. Hey, be sure to check out our Undisputed Fight magazine. It's only $1.99. It's a digital magazine. You can have it on your computer. It's not a print, so you can have it. You can have access to it at any time. Okay, we're still working out the iPhone app and the Android, but we're all trying to sort that out. We're waiting on these guys, man. It's not us. We've already turned everything in. We're waiting on them just to approve it, get it done. Not approve it, but just to program it and put it on there. But it's $1.99. You can't beat that. You know, you're going to have 52 pages of boxing along with our beer of the month and our we're giving out a recipe, a barbecue recipe, while you wait for the fights. Also, our game review. We're giving a game review and a fighter's game review. You're going to find out what fighters are out there in the world right now that like to play particular video games and maybe find out their online name so you can have a possible chance of fighting them online. So be sure to check it out. Like I said, it's only $1.99. You're getting articles from the U.S. all the way to the U.K. The U.K. guys do a fantastic job from covering the sport and doing exclusive interviews and no other content you're going to find anywhere else except for Leaving the Ring's Undisputed Fight magazine. Like I said, $1.99 per issue or $9.99 for the whole year. You can't beat that. Christmas is coming, guys. Tell your old ladies to buy you the Undisputed Fight magazine subscriptions, okay? And if you have a loved one overseas fighting in the war, guess what? Buy it for them, too. We'll set them up. We'll get their email, and we'll be sure that they get their magazine as well so they can check it out. Anyways, let's go on our fight schedule with Mr. Gable Montoya here on Leaving the Ring. Gabe?
All right. September 30th, 2011, at the Chumash Casino in Santa Ynez, California. Jose Alasogon, 29-0 versus Ali Chiba. I guess that's how you pronounce it, 35-1. And then underneath that is Darley Perez, 22-0, versus Oscar Meza, 22-4. This is on Showtime's Showbox, the next sort of the new generation. At the Orange County Fairgrounds, as we mentioned, in Costa Mesa. On Telefutura, Louis Ramos Jr., 19-0, versus David Rodella, 15-4-3. Underneath that in support is Ronnie Rios, 15-0, versus Roger Speedy Gonzalez. And then moving along to Saturday night, October 1st in Atlantic City, New Jersey, the Boardwalk Hall on HBO, Sergio Maravilla Martinez, 47-2-2, versus Darren Dazzling Barker, 23-0, for the real middleweight title. They actually say WBC middleweight title on the schedule, but that's not true because the Junior the Fraud has it. Underneath in support on HBO is Andy Lee, 26-1, versus Brian Vera, 19-5. I'm picking Andy Lee by either late stoppage or by decision, and I got Martinez in 7 or 8. What are your picks, Dave?
I got look. Like I said before, I actually got Barker into this fight. I got him fighting and fighting to the last end of this fight. Now, not last end, but I'm just saying he's going to be in the fight. I'm not counting him out. I'm not saying it's an easy fight for Martinez at all. I think Barker does bring particular tools that are going to maybe puzzle Martinez for the time until he figures him out. Barker has to make this an ugly fight. He's got to make it a very, very physical fight. He's got to make Martinez think a little bit quicker than what everybody else has been allowing him to do. And that means be on top of him from round one all the way down. Barker, though, has shown he's gassed out. In his last fight, he saw that he was able to gas out. The other thing is bending at the waist and looking at the canvas. He cannot do that. The other thing is that doing stuff illegally in the ring, it's going to cost him a point. He may be able to get away with it in the UK, rabbit punching, measuring with the jab. He could probably get away with that in the UK. But in Atlantic City, you're not going to be able to do it unless you got an incompetent referee like Cortez or Russell Mora. But I doubt that very much is going to be in his advantage with the referee swaying towards him. It's going to be a Martinez night. Like my co-host said, this is Marivella Noche, Noche de Marivella. So you know that more or less everybody's going to be siding with him. So I'm seeing maybe a ninth or tenth round stoppage for Martinez. I think Martinez is going to probably fall into whatever Barker's bringing, but he's going to be able to stop him and figure him out, and you're going to see Martinez with the hand risen.
That's very detailed. it works for me. Yeah, I think, you know, I think Martinez is just too fast, higher class of fighter. You know, and there's a reason why the guy's 13-1. The bookmakers are always right. I don't know what the under is, but for me, it's going to be 7 or 8. I think Martinez is just too fast, too strong, hits too hard. It's just at the top of his game, and is overall a better fighter. Could Barker get lucky? Sure. Could he turn it into an ugly fight that goes to decision? Absolutely. Do I think he will? No. At the MGM Grand Casino in Las Vegas, Nevada, that same night on Fox Sports, Toshiaki Nishioka, 38-4-3, versus Rafael Marquez, 40-6. This is for the WBC junior featherweight belt. I'm taking Nishioka. I'm taking him by knockout, probably about 7 or 8.
You know what?
I don't think Rafael Marquez has got his legs anymore. I don't think he's got his punch resistance. And I think it's very telling that Beristain let him go and was fine with it.
You know,
that might have been a personality thing.
Yeah, that might have been. I mean, we're talking about Marquez, who's been with Nacho Brisson for how many years? You know, he pretty much developed his style for Marquez. But, you know, what's his name again?
Nishioka.
Yeah. Nishioka, a lot of folks Nishioka, a lot of people don't really know a whole lot about him. He's the guy that knocked out Johnny Gonzalez in the third round. You know, he's a guy that does have a really good punch, and is pretty sound, and Marquez does still carry a big punch, but I think he has a lot more against him in this fight. One is, like you said, his legs. Two is he can be hurt. Three is he cuts. You know, and without having legs, he now more tends to sit in the pocket and try to trade with you to get you out of there. I don't think he's going to be successful. Again, you know, when he fought Wilmar Lopez, he was having some success. But you saw that those volumes of punches, you know, where his body being a little bit older and his shoulder giving out in that fight, it's against him in so many ways. He's in for a really tough night. I see him losing this fight. And the same amount of rounds like you were just mentioning right now, Gabe.
Yeah, I just don't think. I mean, Rafa could land a good punch. Nishioka has got a really interesting style. Defensively, he's very awkward. He uses his arms and his forearms to block things or kind of deflect things in a way I haven't really seen before or don't see very often with fighters. Floyd does it a little bit. Well, this guy does it in a really strange way, though. He kind of, almost the way Foreman used to do that, kind of X his arms in front of him or kind of cross him in a strange way, and your gloves can't get through.
Right.
But then he's got that legitimate power, you know, and Rafael Marquez is not that young at this point. And I didn't think he looked that great in his last fight. I thought he looked kind of flat. So, again, I'm just, you know, I got to go with Nishioka. On Fox Sports, Roman Gonzalez, 29-0, versus Omar Soto, 22-7-2, for the WBA junior flyweight belt. I'm going with Gonzalez in this. I think he gets it done by knockout. This is, you know, it's Omar Soto. He's got 7 losses. I think he's kind of there for a reason. It's
right.
Going to be an action fight, but I think Gonzalez just gets him out of there.
Me too. I have the same pick.
At the Coliseo, Ruben Rodriguez in Bayamon, Puerto Rico, on pay-per-view.
Yes.
Juan Manuel Lopez, 30-1, versus Mike Oliver, 25-2. Underneath this is Ramon Martinez, 24-1-1, versus Roman Mas, 25-1. And then also Jonathan Okendo, 21-2, versus Saad Kokietjem, 52-2-1.
Nine of the Puerto Ricans, I think, bro.
Yeah. Exactly.
This is the night of Puerto Ricans. I think that's what it should have been, the headliner for that card for pay-per-view. You know, I mean, if you're a WAMA fan like I am, I think, you know, I don't know whether it's going to be a nail-biting fight, because WAMA does tend to make his fights a little bit harder, but really, really exciting. Same thing with Martinez. Jonathan's a little bit different. I think out of that whole crop there, he's a little bit more different than those two. Still got a little bit more proving, but he's a little bit more reserved and a little bit more, I would say, intelligent. Could be wrong, but that's what I'm seeing right now, Gabe.
Yeah, I just think, you know, from top to bottom, this thing will be called, you know, Stop or My Puerto Rican Will Shoot. It's just going to be all about them, you know. Wow. This is why I end up doing the schedule, because I can sound out in German words. At the John Sport Forum in New Brandenburg, Germany, Steve Cunningham, 24-2, versus Johan Hernandez, 24-1, for the IBF Junior Featherweight belt. Underneath that, Sebastian Sylvester, 34-4-1, versus, Grigorz Protska, 25-0. Sylvester will be looking to bounce back from his loss to Daniel Gill for the WBA middleweight title, or one of them. Ed Carl Murat will also be on there, 24-1, versus Gabriel Campillo, 21-3. And these are light heavyweights in action. I'm going to go with Steve Cunningham. I think I don't even know. You know, I've kind of been looking at this fight. This is like one of those ones I was like, all right, I'm going to break this down later on. I'm going to shoot a shot in the dark. And that's actually for the cruiserweight.
Cruiserweight.
Not a junior featherweight belt. That's a typo. I'm probably going to go Steve Cunningham. I kind of like his athleticism. I like his power. It is in Germany. I don't know.
Well, Steve, that's the thing, too. It's in Germany. But the thing is that he's being sponsored. If I got this right. Yeah, he's being sponsored over there in Germany by a pretty good sponsorship. So I'm not looking at an American coming to Germany. I'm looking at an American that's settling there for a moment, and they're kind of homing him. You know what I mean? That's kind of what I'm looking at. So I got Steve Cunningham winning this fight, and this is his second title defense for that cruiserweight title.
It's kind of hard for me to go with Cunningham, but I'm just going to take him. I'll just get off the fence. The Sylvester fight, I think, is probably a little bit more of a toss-up. He's starting to look long in the tooth. You got this young, up-and-coming, undefeated guy coming at him. I haven't seen him, but, you know, we will see him this weekend if you got a stream. I'm going to go with the upset special. I'm going to go Proxa. And then the other fight, I don't know, flip a coin. I have no idea. Probably Carl Murat, but you never know.
I'll go with your pick.
All right. That guy.
Yeah, with that
guy.
With
a foreign
guy.
My boxing knowledge just like ran to empty. Also at the Fitzgerald's Casino, this isn't on TV, but in Tunica, Mississippi, Kareem Mayfield, 14-0-1, versus Patrick Lopez, 20-4. It's significant because he's a young contender moving up, or a not so young contender. I want to take Kareem Mayfield in this, probably by knockout. I think Lopez has seen better days.
I think so, too.
It won't be any different. Yeah.
Kareem Mayfield, I see him as well getting past Lopez. Though, you know, Kareem can make fights, as we've seen him on ESPN and or live, make him a little bit tougher than when he needs to. As well, to untelevise him, hey, Kelly, is Roger Rommel, the younger brother of Fernando Vargas, is going to be fighting. And surprisingly, he still does not know who he's going to be facing on Saturday night. Hopefully we'll know a little bit more on Friday so that we can report it, put it up on Leaving the Ring and Undisputed Site so that you guys can know who he's facing next. They said they're going to be sending us some pictures of the result, whether win or lose. Sergio Martinez has got his exclusive apparel out, T-shirts that he wants to give out and sell to the fans. This is a fundraiser for kids in Oxnard, I believe. I don't quote me there. Either Oxnard or maybe his home country, Argentina. But he hasn't sent me all the information, so we have not yet know exactly what we're promoting here for the pound-for-pound middleweight champion, Sergio Martinez. As soon as we get all the information, we'll put it up on our website and in the magazine, Undisputed, so that you more or less know how to receive and buy a Marivella exclusive T-shirt that he's made strictly for his fans there. Anyways, so no Monterosian tonight. Apologize, I was told because I had spoken to him that he was going to be on with us here on Leaving the Ring to state his case and why Angulo should back out of his fight with James Kirtland happening in Cancun, Mexico. But when I contacted him earlier today, an hour before the show starts, he said, you need to contact my manager and confirm it. Well, I did contact his manager, left him a message, and even text him, and nada. Not a damn thing. So I don't know.
So,
I don't know how to defend that.
So let me get this straight.
Go ahead.
He talked to you on Twitter, kind of called you out, talked to you about some things. You guys talked to each other. He wanted to come on the radio show.
Yes.
He was all set for it. And the last minute he pulled out.
The last minute he pulled...
Oh, it sounds familiar.
Yeah, and you know what? That last minute
shocking
pulling out can get you
him.
In big trouble. And...
It sounds like the Angulo fight. So,
yeah.
I don't know.
Well, you know, the thing that I remember I talked to you immediately when we saw him tweeting and I spoke to him. And I said, look, let me, before I even go further and talk about this here, about our conversation between me and Vince Monterosian, fighters, promoters, publicists, don't get upset, please. You know, because we do hear the aftermath. You guys either call us or you email us upset because we mentioned something about your fighter, or we said this, or you said too much. It's like that old, remember that song? What song was that? I said too much. Whatever. Anyways, I'm losing focus because I'm thinking about something else. So anyways, don't get upset. This is what we're here for. This is why we have a radio show, is to talk things out and do the report and news and break down the particulars about the sport. So I'm speaking of, Monterosian, which I believe was on a Monday night, if I remember correctly. I can't remember. Gabe, was it Monday? It was Monday, right?
Yeah, it was Monday or Tuesday, yeah. They all blend together when you're as drunk as I am.
Yeah. And he was tweeting that, telling Angulo, who has a Twitter himself, okay, you know, don't sign the fight. Forget the money. I'll fight you right now. We all know that I could beat you, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Now, us guys that are a part of the media, we already knowingly know because either, and this came from my co-host who covers the sport with a fine cone, okay, not other reporters that later reported that the fight was on. He threw it out there. This fight's been signed. It's going to happen. He knows it was signed. To me, this was a way to kind of smooth over the fact that he did back out of this fight. That his manager sending out a report, a letterhead, actually an email blast of the reasons of him not taking on the fight. To me, this was collateral damage by saying, okay, they signed it. Now I'm going to make it sound like I want it. I want to fight him, blah, 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 blah. So that doesn't make it look like I'm ducking the guy. I know, you know, it's already signed. You know, we could have probably did a little bit better. Better cover-up, and I wanted to ask him some real questions about that. No, ask him, really, did you not know that this fight was already a done deal since you passed on it? You know what I'm saying?
Well,
it
was kind of weird, too, was that, and I was talking to the, like I said, the Angulo camp yesterday, and I don't think this is too revealing, but they said, I don't know where there was Boxing Scene or somebody had put up an interview. I think it was like quotes from, the way they described it was quotes from like Mexican papers, and like Boxing Scene was quoting it, and you know, I didn't read it, so I can't say for sure, but that's what they were telling me. And they said there was an interview during the week saying, well, we're just waiting for Kirkland to sign the contract, we're all ready to go. It was kind of like Angulo talking some shit like James wasn't going to sign the contract.
Right.
And, you know, like, I know Dan Raphael came out with this for today, but I knew this fight was a done deal like weeks ago. It's been a done deal. You know, it was basically just working out the numbers, trying to work out. Golden Boy wanted, you know, a few different people on the undercard. They ended up getting Quillen and McEwen. But that was all they were really working out, was like a bigger fee so they could make more money for everybody involved. And then get a bunch of names on there and kind of move Quillen ahead.
Right.
So... and ultimately, I got to say that, you know, if Quillen's listening, you were right. You got a bigger fight, you know, than I guess Ishae Smith. You're going to be on HBO. Good, you know, good luck.
Good move.
Congratulations.
Right.
But that basically, Gulu's people said, we never did that interview. Kirkland wasn't hemming or hawing. They both share the same manager, you know. Cameron Duncan and Mike Miller worked with Kirkland, and they also worked with Angulo. There was no problems with that fight, and I wonder if Ivanis saw that and was like, you know, maybe there's still hope and I can get back in there. I think a lot of it was blowback from Top Rank. I don't think they were happy one bit with him turning
down
that fight.
Yeah,
and
his email blast. His email blast was not from Top Rank. There was no word. It was basically a cricket sound coming from his promoter, Top Rank, where it came more from his publicist and his and his manager, who turns out to be his uncle, Serge. You know?
Right.
And Top Rank has been known to be hush-hush about things that they do not like. I mean, look at what's his name's career? Omar Henry. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, so, you don't really, you know, back off and start turning down stuff when everything is just getting good. You just don't do it. And I'm sorry, I don't know what fight he was waiting for to happen besides this fight, but this was the fight. There was no other fight. You take this, you hopefully, you know, beat the guy, and you move on. You don't turn this fight down and go, I'll wait for the next one. You know, this was the fight. And I don't understand it, you know, but...
But anyway, thank you, though. I mean, we get Kirtland and Angulo. Thank you.
Yeah, exactly. We do get a really good fight. So
we do. You know, the good thing about it was that Monterosian turned it down, walked away, just because, you know, and you know what? I can't knock the reason why they did. They said, look, you know, I'm being offered the same amount of money for Green. But that just tells you the mentality of fighters nowadays, that they don't understand that fights are you're valued by the amount of fights and the way you fight in the ring, not by popularity, you know. And Facebook and Twitter, and I wrote a whole article about this on the Undisputed magazine, you know, for October issue. Is Twitter and Facebook has in a lot of ways has ruined good potential fights to be made for us hardcore boxing fans. Okay, it's taken away a lot of potential negotiations among managers, because fighters use their fingers to do a lot more talking than doing it in the ring. You know, Monterosian had a great opportunity of showing his display of boxing skills and showing his display of the reason why he is a threat in his division, but chose the route of saying, well, you know, I'm being offered the same amount of money. I'm not going to do it. I'm going to wait because we should get paid more money. First off, you're not that known. Secondly, you got to fight to be known. Thirdly, you got to fight and win so that fans can back you up. It just don't do it like that. You know, you got to do it the traditional way. You know, has the internet done a lot of great things for us boxing fans? It has. But at the same time, it's done a lot of bad for us here, you know, for our sport. But anyway,
well, I think, you know, you get all kinds of stuff. You get the Omar Henry guys who think, I'm a bigger star because I've got 6,000 followers and you know, or whatever. And, you know, I'm a superstar. I'm ready to go. And they don't realize that doesn't really translate, you know. I mean, Floyd's got over 1 million people following him on Twitter, but they still had to give away tickets. It isn't the same thing. You know, they gave away like 7,000 or 8,000 tickets, maybe even more.
And it's not leverage. That's what they're thinking. They think this is leverage. This is not leverage.
Not leverage.
You know what I mean?
I mean, honestly, you know, I've got like, you know, I won't say my number, but I've got a pretty decent number of people that follow me. That I don't even know if that means that many people actually read my stories. You know,
right.
I send them out. I only get a few people that go, hey, nice story. And it's usually the same people. Every once in a while, it's somebody different. It doesn't mean like, well, 2,500 or 500,000 people read, you know, and hang on every word that I say. It just doesn't, it's not the same. It's not, you know, instant celebrity where you put some water in and pop it in the microwave and boom, you've got, you're on the cover of Time magazine. It just doesn't work that way. But, you know, this fight, you know, Martin Erosian, I found really kind of funny, you know, when I was translating this Nacho Beristain piece that I was doing, the three-parter that I did on Max Boxing. It's funny to me that in the middle of all that, we start talking about Armenian boxers. And
Nacho Berestain considered them to be, out of all the kind of, you know, Eastern Bloc fighters, the toughest fighters to fight. And he said it's a style that we weren't really exposed to because of, you know, the separation there. They weren't letting the Soviets come over here, so we weren't seeing them very often. We'd see them in maybe amateur competition, or we'd see them in the Olympics, but we wouldn't see them as pros. And he kind of looked at Martin Rosen as a very tough fight for Angulo. He thought he could get him in there because Martin Rosen likes to fight a little bit more than he should. But he said if Martin Rosen is going to box, Angulo's going to have a tough time figuring out that style. There's certain things that he does that are not, that, you know, they're not typical of most fighters. And Angulo's never seen that look. So it's kind of funny that he passed, even though he was like, you know, I can understand. He didn't want to go to Mexico. He wasn't crazy about the money. They'd been offered the shot at the title several times and had to fight like a couple of eliminators. But other guys have gone through that. Kelly Pavlik went through that. He bitched about it, but he eventually got his middleweight title. And
yeah, he had to go to Miranda in order to get that title, you know?
Right, he had to fight two guys. I think like Zertucci might have been one, and then Miranda was like the second eliminator. It was like, what the hell? But he still did it, and he still ultimately got his title. So, you know, do you want it or do you not want it? And I think that's what it comes down to. Sometimes you got to take the short money and go the hard route. But if you believe in yourself, do it. And let's say you don't win or you get robbed. It's probably going to be a good fight if it comes down to the wire like that. Everybody's going to respect you more. They're going to want to see you more. Maybe they didn't see you before, but now they like you because you were in a great fight. Great fights do a lot for your career. They always do.
Yeah.
Like Chirag said, there's nothing bad about being in a great fight, so why not be in it?
Absolutely. You know,
Barker's not going to do a lot for Martinez unless Barker's not who we think he is or the odds maker thinks he is.
But
he becomes an all-time great.
It keeps him in the eye of fans. It keeps him fresh in the minds of fans. You don't hold on to a gift card. You cash it out.
No. Right.
You know? And that's what Martirosyan fell apart. He didn't want to cash out his gift card.
Yeah. I'll give you that. I mean, it does keep him in the eye of the public with Martinez. But at the same time, okay, let's say it's a tough fight. Then Floyd and all those guys can say, well, shit, he just struggled with a no-name guy from England who's like a 13-1 underdog, or knowing them, they'll probably misquote the odds and say 26-1. And Martinez isn't as good as we thought he was.
Right.
But if he knocks him out, he knocked out a bum. It doesn't really, you know, do a lot for him. You know, it's a kind of a lateral move. I mean, I thought the Zurich fight was a good fight. There's, you know, like Steve doesn't ever agree on that it was going to be good or that Zurich was worth a shit. I always felt that guy was really good. He just got that injury and he kind of sat on the shelf and didn't really get a chance to take on any of the top 54 guys and really prove himself. And I thought that was a tough fight, and Martinez took his ass out, and I actually value that win. But Barker, you know, I guess it's the kind of tough or the easy gimme win that most people kind of get after a tough run. But I didn't really ever understand this fight. And especially when your argument for not fighting Chirag is no one knows who he is, and then you fight Darren Barker, who, like, no one knows who he is. You know, he doesn't even have a belt. So, I don't know. We'll see. But I thought that interesting that Berestain thought that Bonas was a tough fight, and I don't know if Bonas even knew that. You know, it's like obviously he didn't think he was a tough fight, or he would have taken the fight.
Well, he's definitely in a tough tight fight right now with James Kirtland. That's something that we all need to talk about next week, even with the undercard. Hey, it's about that time for us to shut it down here on Leaving the Ring and wait for next week. It's always fun and it's always a pleasure for myself and my co-host Gabriel Montoya and our producer, Mr. David Chen. Don't forget, check out our magazine. It's due to drop on October. Look for it either 5th or 6th. We'll blast it out on Twitter and on Facebook. If you're not following us on Twitter, follow us. It's all capital letters, LIITR Boxing. And follow us on Facebook, Leaving the Ring on Facebook. Anyways, man, hey, always fun. Had a pleasure. If you missed the show, you can always catch it back on our website, Leaving the Ring. Everybody, have a great night. My boy Gabe, have another great night, brother. I'll talk to you in a minute. Because you know what happens. We hang up and then we end up calling each other, talking about this and this and that.
Last word, you know, we got a few seconds. Oscar, Victor, just go rematch Berto. Take the test like he just did with Floyd.
Let it go.
and just let's just move on to a good fight, which hopefully be a second good fight. Don't hold more press conferences. It was just silly. You opened up boxing writers to just come up with one-liners all day long. It was great entertainment for us, but it isn't going to get you another fight with Floyd. You had your shot. You blew it. Let's just move on. And
You know, and I got one great liner for Oscar is, you know what, you're sitting there in a rehab and they tell you, just let it go. Let the bottle go. Same thing. Let it go. You're not going to get a rematch. Anyways, great night over here on Leaving the Ring. You guys all take care. Have a good night.